Coming up, it's time for TWiT. We've got a great show starting off. Matt Honan talks about how he got hacked hard. We've also got a visit from Kara Swisher of All Things D. Patrick Norton, my own buddy, is here from TechZilla. Justin Robert Young and Ed Bott, too. We'll talk about the latest news next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 365, recorded August 5th, 2012. Sharks and Nazis. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office, Mac, or PC from any other computer and from your iPad and iPhone, too. Sign up for a 30-day free trial right now at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code TWiT. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard it about it on TWiT. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT8. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Visit audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, a look at the week's tech news. And what a panel we have today. My God, I'm verklempt. Starting, we'll start from right to left. Kara Swisher from All Things D. Great to have you, Kara.
Hi.
It's great to see you once again. Mr. Patrick Norton from TechZilla.
Hey, everybody.
Part of the Discovery Networks.
Woohoo!
Great to have you, and of course our show TWiT, This Week in Computer Hardware. Great show, boy, last week when you're doing it here, and that was cool.
It was fun.
It was fun to see you guys. Yeah, that was awesome. Mr. Justin Robert Young of NSFW, and author, no.
Well, contributor, I can say that I'm a friend of Patricia Harkins Bradley.
A friend of the amazing Patricia Harkins Bradley, who has a very hot book, we'll talk about it, called Diamond Club, that is rising up through the charts.
Burning up the charts. Literary phenomenon.
On the iBook store. Just an incredible thing. And I think you know, she's kind of a recluse, but I think you know her. So we'll get,
she is.
The inside story there from you. And yeah, everybody in the chat room is doing this.
There we go.
I got to do it right. There we go. Quiet. Ixnay on the Iman day. And Ed Bott is also with us. Great to see Ed. Boy, I've known Ed for so many years. Former editor of, I like to throw this in, Ed. PC Computing?
PC Computing, editor of PC Computing, and before that, managing editor of PC World.
PC World,
which
too.
Is when you and I used to be, we used to do, you did John Dvorak's show on
right.
the radio.
And John would drag you in, and it was great to have you.
Yeah, well, he'd go off, I don't know where he'd go, and I'd come in and take John's place.
Ed does the Ed Bott Report on ZDNet, a great ZDNet blog talking about mostly Microsoft, but anything else you feel like talking about?
There'll be some Google and iCloud stuff this week, I'm pretty sure.
Good. Well, we'll find out. But before we get into the meat of the matter, I wanted to introduce Matt Honan. I've known Matt for quite some time. You might remember him from Gizmodo. And are you working for Wired now, or are you just freelancer, Matt?
I am. I'm a full-timer at Wired now.
Full-timer at Wired. And I read an article that just terrified me, a blog post that you wrote on your blog about getting hacked. And it's you can read it at emptyage.com if you want to read the story. But I thought we'd get Matt on because I think this is a
a kind of morality tale for the cloud generation. What happened?
I think that there's several things that are interesting about it. We're all sort of increasingly relying on cloud services, and a lot of us, myself at least, tend to link accounts together. And both of those things, when combined, can make for some really dangerous situations.
So you had an iCloud account.
Right.
You turned on a feature of iCloud, which I think is actually a useful feature. It's the remote wipe feature. So they've had for a while with the Find My iPhone, you could remote wipe a lost mm-hmm. iPhone. And they now have, and I think this is new in Mountain Lion, I don't remember it before, the ability to remote wipe a laptop.
It was certainly a Lion feature because I haven't upgraded to Mountain Lion on my MacBook yet. So what happened, if you're ready for me to get into it, what happened was Friday, I left work a little early and was home just before 5 o'clock. And I started playing with my daughter, and my phone died, or it looked like it died. And I went to go plug it in. And when I plugged it in, it started up to the screen, the start screen, like the initial start screen that you get when you first get a new iPhone. It says plug into iTunes. And I thought, oh, that's weird, but, you know, things happen. And I went downstairs to connect it to my Mac, because I'd backed up really recently to my desktop, and restored from that backup. Oh, I'm sorry, I should say, when I tried to log into iCloud, it said my password was wrong, and I didn't think that much of it. I went downstairs, flipped open my MacBook, and it almost instantly went to a gray screen and asked for a PIN to log in, a four-digit PIN. And at that point, I knew I had real problems. And what turned out that had happened was that someone had hacked into my iCloud account using basically social engineering techniques, and they were able to remote wipe my iPhone, iPad, and MacBook. And because I'm a terrible computer user, I hadn't backed up my MacBook in a really long time.
Well, and you did something else bad, which was you had iCloud as your password recovery for both Gmail and Twitter.
Actually, just Gmail. So that really exasperated things. So what happened next was that the chronology of events was basically... And I've been in touch with the person who hacked into my account. They were ultimately trying just to get my Twitter. They just wanted my...
Because you had the Gizmodo Twitter account.
They weren't even trying to get to the Gizmodo Twitter account.
They just wanted Matt.
They just wanted Matt. The Gizmodo Twitter account was just a bonus. They didn't even realize it was connected until they got into mine. At some point, you can link Twitter accounts. And so at some point, when I worked at Gizmodo, I had linked my Twitter account with Gizmodo's Twitter account so I could, you know, not have to log in and log out every time from the web. And that hadn't been undone since I left.
Even though you'd left Twitter. I mean, Gizmodo, yeah.
Right, so I was still linked. They didn't actually have password-level access to the Gizmodo Twitter account. They just had password-level access to my Twitter account. So what they did was they used a social engineering technique to get to my iCloud account. They used my .Mac email as the backup email for Gmail, got into my Gmail, and then used Gmail as the account verification for Twitter, and got into my Twitter account.
Wow.
Now, you did a few things wrong, and there's going to be pedantic people I know in our chat room who said, well, if you had only done this, this, and this, and of course... But this is the kind of thing we're all doing, and this is kind of the reason I think it's a morality tale. You at first thought your password maybe had been hacked or brute forced.
Right. Yeah, that was my initial suspicion. I mean, I just thought that, you know, I had a seven-digit alphanumeric password, and...
That's pretty weak.
I've had it for years, and that's pretty weak. And like, I just haven't changed it in years out of laziness. I don't use it anywhere else, but that's not a good password. I mean, most of my passwords... I use one password, and most of my passwords now, the new password generator... You know, 15 characters, 16 right. characters. And so I thought, okay, well, someone, you know, used some sort of technique to crack my password. A lot of other people were speculating that someone had set up some sort of intercept to you know, a keystroke logger or something. But as it turned out, both the hacker told me and Apple subsequently verified, Apple Tech Support verified with me, someone called Apple Tech Support at 4:30 on Friday, or about 4:30 on Friday, claimed to be me, knew some details, knew enough details, and was able to have a temporary password issued.
Oh.
When the temporary password is issued, they are able to log into iCloud and completely change the password. And that was kind of step one. Step two was wiping all my stuff so that I couldn't go in and stop them. And step three was going into my Gmail and getting my Twitter. Step four was they deleted my Google account. And then they just went crazy on my Twitter account for several hours Friday.
You say the hacker contacted you. How do you know it's him or her?
I should say I'm not positive that it's him or her, but they've given me details that allow that they give me enough details, including some account details, that I know that if it wasn't the person who actually did it, that the person was certainly involved in it. They know stuff that something right. that someone else wouldn't be able to tell me.
And they were targeting your Twitter account. That was what this whole thing was about, was so they could put stuff on your Twitter account.
They told me, the guy said, we just want your Twitter account. We just did it. He said, we didn't have anything personal against you.
You've got that account back.
I do have that account. I've got now all my accounts back, and Apple has my MacBook. I mean, the big priority for me is recovering my data. I've got a young child, and I just hate thinking of all the pictures that I would use if I lost all my data.
No kidding. Anybody have any yes. questions for Matt?
Well, I mean, what do they put up on your Twitter account?
Crap. Was it spam? Links, why were they trying to make money off of it? What were they?
Was it for the lulls?
Links to some YouTube videos, links to some other exploits they'd done, some, you know, basically racist, homophobic statements.
So you were just someone with a bunch of followers, and they wanted a platform to yell and scream like idiots.
I think basically, yeah, and they liked that it was a three-letter Twitter account.
Ah.
It's my account, my name.
It's at M-A-T, which means you joined Twitter very, 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 very early.
I guess so.
And made yourself a target.
I've got a question here.
Yes, Ed.
Matt, do you feel in some sense, I know this might be a slightly insensitive question to ask, but do you feel lucky in a way that these guys weren't evil and malicious and skillful enough to hide their tracks for days or weeks while they mined your information and maybe tried to social engineer some of your contacts?
Certainly, absolutely, 100%. I mean, the first thing I did was call, before I even realized that my Gmail had gotten hacked, the first thing I did was call Apple, and I was on the phone with their tech support department for a very long time, and I kept telling them, I got to get off the phone and call my bank. Because I mean, I was really worried that they were immediately going to go into my, you know, online bank. Once you get into somebody's email, you can get everything. And I was worried they were going to go into my online banking, go into, you know, any number of other accounts and just clean me out. That was my big concern at the time.
But you also have, I mean, you have, I'm sure, a very impressive address book.
Patrick just changed his Twitter password
for the second time in 24 hours.
I think
hours.
You're not alone. I think there's people listening right now who are all furiously. First thing I did when I heard this is I put turn on two-factor authentication on my Google account. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ed. Go ahead.
That's okay. So you must have a pretty impressive address book with, you know, contacts that if somebody wanted to social engineer, you know, people you know, people at Apple, people at Google, people, you know, people who are your sources, they could do a fair amount of damage, and they could actually use exploits and install keyloggers on those people's machines. So in a sense, I mean, as a wake-up call goes, this is a very painful and ugly one, but the damage is hopefully contained in a way that it wouldn't have been if somebody had been truly malicious and evil.
Yeah, it was certainly a wake-up call to me. I hadn't, to be honest, considered, you know, using social exploits to get to other people from my account. I hate to say it, but I just keep thinking I'm kind of lucky because it really could have been a lot worse. I mean, I'm really distraught about my data possibly being lost, but in the grand scheme of things, it was not. I mean, it could have been so much worse.
I'm just puzzled that Apple. I don't understand how Apple could have been tricked.
I'm not quite ready to. I'm probably going to reveal this in the Wired story tomorrow. I've got an email into Apple about this, and I want to give them both a chance to respond and to fix this. But there's some information that you can know about someone's account that lets you bypass having to answer the security questions.
So there's a flaw in their system.
I mean, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not information that's easy to get. I mean, I don't think I could have gotten it.
I got the impression from the message the hacker sent you that he knew of this flaw, that he was exploiting a known flaw.
Yeah, that's the impression that I have as well. I mean, I have the impression that this was there were the my understanding is that there are multiple people involved in this, and they had multiple areas of expertise. The guy who I've been in touch with, and I've only been in touch with one person. This apparently was his area of expertise.
Matt, did you get a sense that beyond just being a person with a three-letter Twitter account, that they knew who you were?
I got actually the sense that they did not know who I was.
So you were. It was just. It could be Ray or Joe. On Twitter, it's just three letters. That's why they targeted you.
That's my impression. I mean, that's what I've. That's what they have said to me. I mean, you know, I don't know. How do you know?
And you and what are you doing now to protect? Obviously, you've got backup from now on.
Well, I disabled Find My iPhone and Find My iPad.
I'm looking at my iCloud. You can erase my desktop computer. If you can erase my computer at home, you can remote wipe any of these computers that are on currently. You just press that remote wipe button. If you got in my iCloud, you could wipe. Don't click that, Patrick.
Leo, something that happens when you do that. Is that it initiates a four-digit PIN, okay? And only the person who presses that button gets to see that four-digit PIN. So if I'm on the other end, if you're on the other end and someone does that, you don't really have any way to stop it. And this is one of the things that I think really ought to be fixed about that situation is that, you know, if there's going to be a PIN code, it ought to be something that you set up, or there ought to be a second password, there ought to be something that lets the person basically stop this in their tracks, or that at least, you know, has some sort of... you know, secondary level of authentication before you can pull a trigger and remotely wipe a hard drive. I mean, it's wiping a Mac. You know, I kind of gradually got into this. I had to find my iPhone set up, and then I was like, oh, well, I can do the same for my Mac. And that's actually quite different than wiping an iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more data on there.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that ought to have better security.
That'd be harder to do. Matt, I'm sorry this happened to you, but in a way, I'm really glad that it happened to you and that the world now knows because of who you are, and I think this is it's a wake-up call. I think Ed, you said it right. It's a wake-up call for everybody, and I hope that watching this, everybody is now going to secure their systems best you can.
I mean, would you turn off the iCloud? Would you turn off the? I mean, obviously, you've turned off the Find My iPhone or wipe my computer. Would you suggest everyone do that at this point?
If you're backing everything up, I mean, see, this is somewhere where I really screwed up, right? I mean, is that I wasn't backing up I wasn't backing up my Mac regularly, I back up my desktop Mac every day, but I had not backed up my MacBook in a long time.
That's interesting. And, so you were backing up, it's just that one you didn't back. And I think a lot of us who have multiple computers kind of assume, well, everything's propagating. I'm fine.
Yeah, that was sort of what I mean. You know, I just gotten lazy, and you know, so would I recommend that everybody turn off Find My iPhone? No, but Find My Mac? I mean, I actually probably would turn that off.
You know where your Mac is.
I know, you know where it is. Yeah, I mean, it's like what somebody asked me, like, what's the greater risk? Is it actually having your Mac physically taken from your possession, or having someone be able to get into it electronically? And I think it's probably the greater risk, the more likely risk for a lot of people with a Mac. It's not a phone. Is having it broken into electronically.
Yeah, if you can't find your desktop computer, I think you have bigger problems.
I understand maybe you thought it got stolen, blah, 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 but that's not that likely. I also think that we learned a lesson about where to send password recovery emails and to have kind of a rotating set of emails, not have them all sent to one place. The hacker obviously knew that if he did these erasures, it would be very hard for you to get everything back.
Yeah, obviously. And I gather they sort of backtracked. Like, they started with Twitter and found that, okay, well, my Twitter is linked to my Gmail. And then when they realized that my Gmail was linked to .Mac as the backup there, as the verification there, it was sort of like a jackpot moment for them. You know, having that all linked together was also a bad idea, and it's also something I've changed. I've set up two-factor authentication on my Gmail.
That's a pain, by the way. I did it, too, as soon as I read your story, and that's a pain.
I used to have to do it for work-related emails, and I always thought it was a pain, but you know what? I'm doing it now.
Yep. You have to run Google Authenticator on your phone, you can authenticate Google's stuff pretty easily. You just add that second factor. But then apps that don't know about two-factor authentication, you have to get a special password generated from Google and enter both passwords.
It's a trade-off. Security at best is imperfect. There is no patch for human stupidity. Multi-billion. No. And that's not for you, Matt. Apple's got more money than just about any corporation in North America, and they allowed somebody to social engineer their way into locking at you out of your digital life. That's bad. Whether that was a failure between the keyboard and the chair by whoever was answering the phone, or whether that was, you know, a massive flaw in the way they institute the system, which I think we'll probably find more out in your Wired article tomorrow. But
I can't wait. Yeah.
You know, that scares the delete expletive out of me.
Yep.
That sucks, dude. And I'm sorry you went through this.
I've for a long time, I used to write about this. I wrote a few pieces about this for Gizmodo, but I really feel like password systems in general, I mean, passwords are just a broken system. I mean, just using passwords are a terrible system. I know there are a lot of smart people working on other options. We don't have them yet. And you know, I mean, the ultimate failure point here was this temporary password that was issued. And I mean, this has reinforced every bad feeling I have about our password-based authentication systems.
What would you suggest? I mean, eyeballs or what? I'm curious. What are the solutions?
I don't know. I mean, I think there might be some browser-based solutions for web logins, but generally speaking, I don't know. You know, and I've talked to people in the U.S. government about that. Even I know that the president has actually set up a special office where they're looking at sort of working on next-generation password things, but. You know, one of the big problems is that Microsoft is working on one thing, and Google is working on another, and Apple is working on another, and Facebook's working on another, and everybody sort of has a vested interest in being identity providers, and that means that you know, you don't get some sort of top-down standard.
This gets really important too as we start doing virtual money and things like that, because really all a financial transaction is about is authenticating the two parties. And if you don't have good authentication systems, and we are moving full speed ahead towards digital financial transfers.
And you know, with all due respect to any PayPal employees in the audience, we all know that with large multinational banks make a mistake, it's your fault.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to lock you out of your account forever.
I like second-factor authentication. I think that's a good start. And I think sending a 4-digit passcode to a cell phone one-time use, or having something like Google Authenticator or the Blizzard Authenticator give you these rotating numbers, I think that's a pretty good start.
I'm going all cash.
You'd have to steal my phone and steal my password.
I'm going straight barter from here on out.
Matt, we're going to let you go. Stuff. Thank you. Matt Honan, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, if you're Thanks going so. All cash, I'll be at your house this week.
Yeah, which is safer, right? Your mattress or your cell phone?
You know, nothing is safe. Nothing's Life is safe. Not safe.
There you go. Acceptable risk.
It's best to own nothing. Thank you, Matt Honan.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. Take care. Sorry this happened to you. We'll look forward to the article on Wired.com.
Matt, take you to see Total Recall. We can feel bad about the future.
Did you see that yet, Kara? Is it good?
No, I wanted to last night, and I had some work I had to do, but I want to. I love the first one. I heard the second one's not as good, but I loved that first one.
You can't rent favorite. The first one, which really annoys me, so I spent $20 and I bought it on iTunes.
Oh, really?
You can't rent anything you want to see right before a major movie release.
They're smart. They must be paying attention. But it's actually a very dated film. It's funny. It feels like an old 70s cop show.
Still good. It's fantastic.
It's still a great movie.
Yeah, but Paul Verhoeven is awesome. And that was like very much him in the height of his
powers.
It's
very fun.
Mad genius. But I heard this one isn't as good. That you'll wish that you have more hands to give the finger to the screen because it's not particularly good.
I don't care. I'm going to go. I don't care.
Did you see Batman, Kara?
I didn't. I'm not a Batman. My kids watched Batman Begins last night. I'm not a big Batman fan. I did like the Avengers though. I'm a big sci-fi fan, but I don't know why I didn't see this one.
I think, you know, and I realize this, there's Marvel people and there's DC people, and there's a very difference. Yes. It's like men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Well, and now it's written large. Now it's pop culture.
Ed, you're a DC guy?
Oh, absolutely.
Me too.
Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, the whole bit.
That's it. And these Marvel guys, they feel like kindergarten characters.
Marvel.
They feel like Fisher Price characters.
Great. That was a great film. That was.
I love Spider-Man. I love all the. I'm a Marvel. See? Make mine Marvel. That's...
See? I'm telling you. Yeah. No. So I'm telling you. There's Patrick, you want to weigh
Batman.
In?
My favorite comic book character is the Midnighter.
Yes.
And it goes downhill from there.
Indie crap. Some weird indie crap. I knew it.
Batman is so depressed. It's just like...
He is. In fact, that whole series, the Chris Nolan series is creepy.
It really
Batman
is.
Batman is creepy.
Creepy. It's
an
creepy.
Angry adult male with a bazillion dollars spending his life learning every possible martial show. But there's like, what's
dude,
the,
they're all wearing their pajamas. It's all stupid.
But the Frank, no, they're not. They're not all stupid. They're wonderful commentaries on the human condition. No, the Frank Miller one, there's 7 defensive responses to this attack.
Yeah.
3 of them, you know, incapacitate.
That's
4
good
of
stuff.
Them kill. 1 of them hurts. And then you hear this, like, of course, the next sploosh and the crunchy noise and... Batman's about just being pissed off at the universe.
That's why I like Batman, because it's psychologically complex. It's not some guy dressed up in a crazy
It's
costume.
Not Superman.
Spider-Man's
They're making Superman.
Psychologically
The new
complex.
Superman looks good.
Oh,
the new
that,
Superman
that
looks
trailer
good.
Was stupid.
You didn't like that trailer?
It's
I couldn't
boring.
Figure out why they were on a fishing boat.
Yeah, okay.
It was like the Perfect Storm meets Superman. I didn't really understand the...
It looked like a 90s it's, Gap it's... ad. It was just depressing.
All right, now we've degenerated into Boyville. I have 2 small kids, so I can't
All right,
do this.
We're gonna break. And we'll come back, and we'll actually talk about the tech news. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
There's some big stories, and we got a great team. In fact, Kara, I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to revisit Yahoo, because you know
All
more.
All right.
You know more about what's going on inside Yahoo
I've
than any human.
I've got a good one coming out soon. I got a good one.
Oh, see.
Nice.
Kara's a sly cove, though, because we've had you on the show when you've had scoops and you've sat on them. You've known
I don't
stuff.
Sit on them. I just haven't finished them.
You just know stuff and you don't...
Nested
you,
them.
Like so an I want you to tell all.
I work for Legal Laporte. I work for All Things Digital.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't give you any money, do I?
No. Not yet. But I'm going to that guy's house and getting the money.
Yeah. Okay. He stores it in his mattress. Jerry stores it in his mattress. We're going to talk for a brief moment about our friends at Citrix who do remote access. And by the way, secure SSL. There has never been an exploit using GoToMyPC. And I can't say that about most of the... Yeah, knock on wood. I probably shouldn't say that. They're kind of going, don't say that. But no, seriously, there's been plenty of exploits with many other remote access products, but never with GoToMyPC. And that's because these guys do it right. It uses NAT traversal, uses SSL. You don't have to punch a hole in your firewall. That eliminates a whole category of security issues. If you've not used GoToMyPC, this is a great time to try it. Hey, it's vacation time. Kids are out of school. Your weather's great. You want to go to the pool. You don't want to be at work. Leave. But before you do, get on your Mac or your PC, install GoToMyPC. You can do it free for 30 days. And then take your iPad or even your iPhone with you, and you can access that office computer and do anything you could do if you were at work. You could send or receive email, run any program, access any network resource. It's all there. And on these Retina displays, I have to say, and sometimes your iPad has more resolution than your computer at work. You could do it all. It's fast. It's easy. It's secure. And it's free for 30 days. Visit GoToMyPC.com. That orange try it free button, that's the one you want to hit right there. And then you're going to need a promo code. If you click that, see that promo code there? It's TWIT. It's easy. 4 letters, TWIT. That's all you need. 30 days free. GoToMyPC. The folks at Citrix have been doing this longer than anybody else. You can trust them. And I use them all the time. Hey, a note. We are doing a Mars landing special. Tonight's the night. We were talking before the show. I'm excited.
Oh, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be awesome.
Big deal.
Wow. Kara, it feels like the younger generation isn't into space like I mean, I watched Cronkite, watched Apollo. Younger than me, but I mean, it just seems like the younger generation.
I'm not the younger generation, so I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, is that you love space, right?
No, not really.
Oh, that's right.
Megan,
you work
Megan
for Walt.
Does.
I'm
Megan
sorry.
Megan loves it. She
that's
up,
awesome.
She went to space camp. Megan did.
That's right.
So.
You told us that.
Yeah.
She's like
yeah,
an
with
astronaut.
With Larry and Sergey and Pierre Omidyar and Elon Musk. They all went together.
Wait a minute. They all went to a space camp together? Like a special rich
in Alabama.
Person's
years
space
ago.
Camp?
Yeah, space camp in Huntsville.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they that's actually awesome. Have a launch?
They had suits and everything. It was very nerdy. It was like super nerdy. I think they did all kinds of space campy things. I don't know.
Like Drake Tang and like, you know, had Velcro
fights.
No,
I think they had a little mission. It wasn't real, but I think they had a little, I don't know.
They didn't actually go to space.
There was enough money among the 6 of them, they probably could have launched something into
space.
Well,
you know,
Elon Musk is, right?
Yeah. If there wasn't a Ritz-Carlton near in Huntsville, I wasn't going, so I don't know.
Okay. Standards.
So she doesn't like space. We will do live coverage. The Curiosity after it's... How long has it been flying? It's 18 months, something like that? You know, Patrick.
7 years.
You know,
actually,
7 years? They launched that 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's been in the making.
In the studio.
It's been in the making for 7 years, but it's been flying for not the...
We're seeing
the chat
9
room
months.
Says anything from 3 years to 8 months. Somewhere in there.
Yes. Something like that.
Eight
a
months.
Long time.
8.5 months.
I think it's amazing. It is amazing, yeah. And the stuff they're going to bring back is amazing. I just don't have, you know, it's, I'm sure it's going to bring back so much important data for
one
us.
Of the things they're looking for is evidence of life.
I can't decide if I want to wake my son up tonight so he can witness it. Well, he also might be like, what was that, huh? And then fall back asleep.
Doesn't matter.
That's
doesn't
true.
Matter.
We're
I not... took Henry to see Barry Bonds hit a home run in the World Series. He'll never remember it, but he was there. He was there, and that's all that matters. And then he can tell his grandkids, I got up in the middle of the night with Daddy, and we watched something. I don't remember.
Well, you can just make sure that you put on the TWiT coverage tonight. Here comes the plug. Yeah.
There you go. 10 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, hosted by Tom Merritt, Phil Plait.
The Dr. bad astronomer.
Kiki, the bad astronomer, who is fantastic, the best in the business in terms of describing space.
He's so
stuff.
Bad, he's good.
He is. He's better than bad, he's good.
And we have a 20-minute interview with Steve Sell on the entry, descent, and landing, the EDL, which is that seven right. minutes of terror that we've right. been talking about.
Can Yahoo be fixed?
Let's ask Kara Swisher. Oh. So, Kara, you have always had this inside track.
Mm-hmm.
Into memos, you know what's going on at Yahoo. Were you surprised when Marissa Meyer took the CEO job?
On that Sunday I was given a tip that it was her, and I just couldn't get another source on it, which was interesting. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. And I happened to be on a plane when they announced it the next day. But it was a good idea. I think it came out of a little bit out of left field, but it was kind of an obvious choice if you started to think about it.
Do you think it was one of many? Do you think it was the board that's who?
Yes.
It was their
yes,
idea.
It was Dan Loeb and Michael Wolff on the board. Dan Loeb mostly driving most of it. He'd spent a lot of time out here recently. And I think between him, Michael Wolff, and David Kenney, that was how it was done.
Dan was the dissident investor who
yes. uh-huh.
was very unhappy with how Yahoo was going.
Yes.
Got
yes.
a seat on the board.
Three, actually.
Three seats on the three. Board, mm-hmm. yeah. And so he kind of – now, did they make the call to Marissa? And what was it, do you think, that convinced Marissa to take the job?
Oh, I think she was looking to leave Google. I think there was – I had been following a number of stories of her looking at a bunch of VC firms and other places. I think she was starting to look around. She hadn't gotten promoted in that last Larry round, and I think probably, you know, the people in place were in place, and so probably she was looking for a bigger challenge for herself, probably.
It felt like a little bit of a snub when she wasn't chosen as one of the five big...
Seven or eight.
Or seven, actually. Whoever, running the... And she got moved from search to social or to local.
Yeah, it wasn't down, really. It just wasn't up. And so I think that probably, you know, the people in place are rather young and very vigorous and not, you know, there's only so much room at the top once you start to go to the, you know, when you start to do that. And so I suspect she was looking for something bigger, and this is bigger. This is a chance to really show her management skills or, you know, it's a real challenge for her. So it probably was very appealing to her, I would guess.
It's a risk.
It's it is. I think it's the biggest challenge of any tech business.
Well,
I
mean, you could say RIM would be a bigger challenge.
but at least RIM has they have a business
had.
Right now, and I don't know. I can't really say. If you ask me, what is Yahoo's business? I don't know. I don't know what it is.
It's a big business. That's not absolutely true. It's very profitable. It's not as profitable as it was. It's not as growing as it was. But it's. Good God, doing better than most startups that are selling for $1 billion. Right. It's doing
understood.
Well.
They have a whole bunch of different
primarily
pieces.
But so does General Electric. But yeah,
that's why
it's interesting, because there's value, but you've got to figure out some way to capitalize on it. What a lot of people have said is that she needs to make a decision between being a content company or a web services company.
Mm-hmm. I think the second is what she'll do. I think there's no question. She's gonna double down on advertising tech, I think, and which is a completely opposite direction for what Ross Levinson was going to do, the proposal he made to the board. She's going to expand and compete with Google. I mean, they were very close to a deal with Google to sort of offload ad tech to them, or they were talking to Microsoft. And so I think what's interesting is that I don't think she's going to do that. I think she's going to try to build it up herself and see if she can compete in other ways and differentiating ways. Presumably, because going straight at Google is kind of a loser proposition for anybody at this moment. But, you know, she knows Google inside and out, so she certainly was not as involved in that part of the business, the ad business. That's Susan Wojcicki and others. But she certainly has a familiarity with the company. So,
and when Microsoft and Yahoo made the deal. Microsoft Bing became Yahoo's search engine, but Yahoo, as I remember it, correct me if I'm wrong, continued to run the ad business, right, Ed? Isn't that how it works?
I believe that's right, yes.
So they are well positioned to be an ad company.
Well, they are one. They are an ad. It's ad tech. It's whether they're going to do the serving. And, you know, Google essentially has the most powerful ad serving technology around now. And so the question, Yahoo used to, but doesn't anymore. So it's a lot of investment she's going to have to make to make it so.
So,
a lot.
So like Google, they may offer some services like Flickr or Yahoo Finance, but really their backbone of the company is the ads they serve on their sites and other sites?
Third-party sites. Part of it. But a lot of it is premium ad sales, you know, on their major content sites like Yahoo Finance, the home page. They have three businesses, and it's just the way it is. They've got search, which has been a big moneymaker for them, and now they've got guaranteed income from Microsoft through that deal. Even though it's not performing well, they have a guaranteed deal. The second thing is the home page, which that's where they make most of their money.
People go to Yahoo.com?
They make a lot of money on that home page. Yes, there's 700 million people go through there a month. That's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, through mail. They make quite a bit of money through their mail, but it's declining. Both the search and the mail are declining, and so is homepage. And so that's really the problem, is can they make new services that are so compelling that advertisers want to be on them? And that's hard. What is she going to... there's not a magical unicorn, and a lot of the innovations going on at startups. And so can she bring that into Yahoo? She's certainly an exciting choice to a lot of people, and certainly at Yahoo. She is. I mean, she gave away free food, which was like, that story went crazy, except I tried to point out, by the way, every web company gives away free food. Yahoo was the
We whole, give away it, free food, for crying out loud.
But they went crazy. They went crazy at Yahoo, and I kept pointing out to them, like, you know, everyone else gets it already. You're getting something. But, you know, they didn't have it. And, you know, this week, I'll be writing about what she's done this week. She's doing things that other web companies had been doing, and they hadn't. Yahoo's, like, caught in a time warp or something that didn't get these things. And so we'll see how. You know,
but those are superficial, Kira.
Yes, absolutely, yes. But they're about cultural change. That this is, we're back in the business.
A new era for Yahoo. Kira, can I ask you this?
Sure.
You said that she was looking to leave. Do you get the sense from talking to principal people in this move that there is any bad blood, or that sticking it to Google is part of the challenge for Marissa?
No, I don't think it was bad blood. I just think, there's 10 people that start together, 8 get promoted, and
right.
You don't, whatever. It happens all the time. It's nothing. That's nothing. I don't think there was bad blood. I think she, she had some challenges there. You could say that about any executive at Google. You know what I mean? Like, every one of them has their pluses and minuses. So I think it's not like I'm going to get them. That's not her personality.
That'd feel good, though, if she did get it.
There's no getting Google. I mean,
that does raise the question, though. I mean, there's two ways it seems that she could go. She could, Yahoo's already in partnership with Facebook and Microsoft.
Yeah.
She could kind of create I always say axis, but it could be the allies. But she could create the allies against Google.
Yes.
Microsoft, Yahoo, Apple, Facebook. Versus Google, or she could partner with Google. I mean, the same kinds of partnerships she's doing right now with Microsoft, she could instead do with Google. She has inside knowledge. She knows people at Google. Do you think she'll choose one of those two paths, or is she...
I don't know. I mean, the search one is interesting because, you know, they have this deal with Microsoft, and, you know, Microsoft has failed on a number of performance metrics, from what I understand, and so they certainly could move it over to Google. In that case, there's some regulatory issues, which I think Google's right. aware of, and they're aware of, about Google owning pretty much all of search around the world, so that's problematic.
Google needs Microsoft like Microsoft needed Apple for many years.
Right. I think Yahoo going with Google would be a tough row. I think everyone will get their backs up in search, especially in ad serving. There are a number of different ad serving things. Nonetheless, Google does dominate that area again, but they don't dominate it like they do search, I think. So it's a question. She has a lot of choices, and certainly people want Yahoo to succeed. I think that's one of the parts that is, it's just a question of whether they can make great products that people want to use, and they really haven't done. That's really at the heart of what the problem is they have not made, they've missed pretty much every single trend. Like, like a Pinterest would be a very Yahoo-like thing to have done. So was, you know, Instagram. They had Flickr, you know. I mean, so it just goes on and on and on about things they didn't take. And so the question is, will she be able to inspire, bring in engineers in that can create things, or are those people very happy at startups? And that's the difficult part for her.
What do you think of that idea, Ed? You cover Microsoft. Would it be an interesting thing for Yahoo to team with Microsoft, Facebook, and Apple as an anti-Google allies?
Well, I think Microsoft is feeling pretty glum about that prospect now. They I think they feel like they dodged a bullet.
Didn't they try to buy, what was it, $31 billion?
$31 billion they would have paid for Yahoo, and that would have made the Aquantiv write-down look like just
that was a mere $6.2 billion.
Right, you know, so I think I think any kind of tie-up with Yahoo beyond what they've got right now would be a really, really difficult sell.
Okay,
I agree. Okay, I think they haven't been able to make the search partnership work. So,
right.
And there's all kinds of reasons for that. They've been spending I think at $750 million losses in that online services division every quarter. That's $750 million.
Yeah, but now you can argue, though, that Microsoft has a need to take that money and treat it as an investment, not as a defensive play. They can't afford to live in a world where they don't control search on their devices and where
Absolutely.
They're at the mercy of Google or someone else.
Right.
You know, the new devices, phones and tablets and stuff, have to have robust search built into them. And if you have a new device platform coming out and you have to depend on Google for it, you're in a very, very weak position. So in that sense, the money that they spend in Bing is sort of reinforcing a core aspect of the Windows mobile platforms for them.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I think they can't not be in it. It's just a very pricey investment for them. And I think losing Yahoo would be something. I don't think they want that to happen, although they still haven't fixed the problem with the performance. And then those guarantees do run out at some point. So Yahoo's got to think about what it wants to do.
It's very interesting. And you're right, Kara. I think we're all rooting for Yahoo, not because they were an internet pioneer. We all have fond memories of them. But also, it's good to have some competition for Google.
I want them to take back that old Navy billboard, because that old Navy billboard,
that was sad.
So stupid.
Only San Franciscans know about this, but there was a beautiful Yahoo.
Incandescent light bulb billboard, and old Navy took it over, and then they put on this LED screen that just has dumb one-liners when I'm going home to Oakland.
Let me see if I can find.
Where it all went wrong was the billboard.
Exactly. let me just ask you and Ed one more thing.
Sure.
From a consumer end, I mean, I know for me, following these kind of things, it very much seemed that with Marissa coming in, that Yahoo was overnight looked at differently than what it was before, that there was a possibility that it could be, again, a company that was on the rise from its current trajectory. From you guys talking to your sources, is that the same inside the tech community, people that are making decisions that also just are informed in running businesses? Is that the same idea that it is, you know, for me on the consumer level?
Well, everybody loves one of these stories, you know, this sort of young, exciting computer scientist who happens to be a woman too, and a very interesting person comes in. And so they like these stories. I think it's a bigger job than that, but it's certainly an exciting story. And so it adds a little bit of excitement to the situation. I think that within Yahoo, they're thrilled. The techies are, at least. They're thrilled with her. They think it's fantastic that someone is.
With an actual engineering degree running the company.
The real one. What's interesting is that if you think about it, she is the first executive who is an internet executive running this company, who's an actual native-born internet executive. Because Tim Kugel, there really wasn't an internet, you know, there really wasn't. He was the first, and so he had come from other places. Terry Semel was a Hollywood executive. Jerry was certainly an internet executive, but again, not like her. You know what I mean? She's a native. This is her first job was at Google, which is really interesting if you think about it. Scott Thompson was from a different payment background. So she's really the first 100% internet savvy executive running this company. So that's an interesting aside. I think about that a lot. So we'll see. I don't think one person can change things unless you're Steve Jobs. And you know what? She's not Steve Jobs. Nobody's Steve Jobs. And so that's the problem. Yeah. And so I think they're looking for that story to happen again. And I don't know if that's going to, you know, I think if she's judged on that basis, she'll disappoint. If she's judged on getting back some level of innovation and promise there, she'll do well. We'll see. It's a tough job. Believe me. She doesn't succeed, I won't be surprised because it's so hard. But if she does, it'll be a real coup.
Signs
of life. I think if it's just signs of life, everybody will
just... A heartbeat would be nice.
Well, this is a $5 billion a year company that you're saying signs of life. I mean,
well, okay, you know, you're right.
It's moribund. It's difficult. It's got a bad reputation as an employer in Silicon Valley. You know, engineers stare at it and quake with fear. But it's still racking up $5 billion a year in revenue.
Oh, that.
But that's what's unusual about Yahoo. Right now, you've got three major platform companies. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, all of whom are sort of building walls and fences and toll gates around their platforms. And then you've got a gazillion startups, mm-hmm. all of whom either want to find a little tiny niche within one or more of those platforms, or where their exit strategy is getting purchased by one of those. And to have a company the size of Yahoo that is neither a small startup with an exit strategy or owns its own platform is like, you know, how are they, what's their route out of this? How do they grow? How do they become something? That's where I don't see much prospect of success for Yahoo.
Yeah, she's talked platform a lot internally this past couple of weeks. I'll tell you that. She's certainly said the word platform a lot. So,
that's services,
feels,
right? That's web services.
Yeah. I'm not sure what she's talking about, but I mean, I think the idea is, I don't know. I think that she's thinking much more heavily that Yahoo's has some differentiating qualities above those other ones that Ed was talking about. So
I think
we'll
there's an opportunity. You take Flickr, you take finance, you take sports. You give them an API. You
mail.
Say we're
Don't
a platform.
She's going to go big into mail.
Mail is huge, and Yahoo is really Yahoo Mail is number three in the market, and it's an opportunity. Look what Microsoft did this week with the Hotmail.
I think she's going to go big into mail. I think she's
there's an opportunity because the disappointment I think with Outlook.com was that it really didn't reinvent mail, and everybody is begging for a better system. I don't know what it is. But
she knows mail. She knows mail. She
knows
very
mail.
Gmail. She knows mail.
She knows mail. Maybe there's a magic solution.
One of the things that Microsoft did with Outlook.com this week was to try and take a tarnished brand, Hotmail, which may have a ton of users, but it has very little credibility among the people on this panel, among the people who are watching this show. You know, nobody says, I'm going to go out and get a new Hotmail account and use it to run my business with Gmail. And I think Yahoo has kind of the same problem, you know, whether it's Yahoo.com mail or Ymail or whatever you call it. You've really got a brand there that doesn't have a lot of credibility in either business or among the tech elite. So, you know, they may have to do something like what Microsoft is trying to do with Hotmail, which is to completely rebrand it and completely change the service on the back end. But that is really, really hard to do.
The people who use Yahoo Mail, when I ask people, almost everybody uses Yahoo Mail. There's two reasons. One, they use it for their spam address, right? Everybody's nodding in the audience. That's where they dump their spam. Or two, you're an AT&T customer, and Yahoo Mail is what you get as an AT&T DSL customer.
Yeah, that was an old deal. That was a very old deal.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Still alive.
Is the value...
You know, the only thing is it's a very good product. That's not, you know, I think Walt has given it very good reviews.
I like Yahoo Mail, especially if you play for the Plus version.
It's a very good product. It's not, but it definitely needs updating. And the question is Mail the place to be waging the big fights? I don't know. You know, it's she's been given a big, long amount of time by this board to do these things and spending some money. So I think she's not going to be thinking about Wall Street going forward.
Good.
I think she's going to be thinking about the products. That's my impression.
That's what you got to do, at least for a while.
Is the importance of mail the opportunities for data mining that gives them to be able to...
Yes.
Yeah,
that's we haven't done as much as
everybody else is.
We don't talk about that. Yes, of course it is. Of course it is. But the opportunity is two-faced, because the consumer-facing opportunity is to solve the problem that is mail.
Yeah.
Right.
Email's broken badly. And if you could, I like this, you know, I don't think people know about it, but the sweep feature in Outlook.com right. is actually great.
Yeah.
There's some
it
nice.
It was in Hotmail for over a year.
Right.
And they've surfaced it. In Outlook.com and made it more obvious. And it really is I was going through my old Hotmail account, which is now Outlook.com, and cleaning it up today, and I was able to, you know, get rid of several hundred crud messages just sitting there in the inbox, and simultaneously set up rules to make sure that the crud doesn't come back. So that was, you know, that was pretty revelatory. But
good luck finding it, because I know it's here somewhere in this top bar, and I think you have to click an email first, and then you've got sweep.
It's like finding a feature in a haystack.
Well, but you don't want that command.
You're right.
I think that interface is good, because if that command were there and you hadn't selected
a message,
do anything. What would you get when
right.
you click that?
Right. So it's smart about what you're doing.
I'll tell you what, I think Gmail for me getting a little bloaty. It feels like every new thing that gets added to Gmail is something that is taking away from the
Well, it's clear that that's what Microsoft thought, because they made a video where they took what is obviously Gmail and started crossing off stuff. There's the video.
Yeah.
And said, hey, look at this. This is, of course, what they replaced on the right side there, all those useful things, that more ads. But
yeah.
Well, actually, that right-hand panel contains it contains chat. Or it contains social networking information about the contact that you have. It only contains ads if you're looking at a piece of mail from a contact who's not in your address book, not in one of your social networks.
Well, that's interesting.
Or such. So if you know, Leo, if you sent me a message to my Outlook.com address, as soon as I open that, the thing on the side would show me our social connections, and then I could also click the chat button up at the top, and we could chat directly there without having to leave the mail environment.
Yeah, that is useful.
So there is some smarts in that right panel, but you've just identified the problem, which is there is some very, very intelligent design and you know, very cool new features in there. But you know, somebody like you, you're not going to notice it, because you're not going to use it, because you already have you're in the Gmail world.
Yeah. Right.
You have a tremendous investment there. And I think the only people that Microsoft can pry away from Gmail are those who have it as kind of a secondary address that they use for the things where they don't want to use their real address.
You know, what's really sad is a lot of these features. Years ago, I saw Brad Garlinghouse, who used to be head of communications at Yahoo for many years, showed me a lot of this kind of thing years ago. And it just never got productized at Yahoo. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd see a lot of things. Like a lot of stuff that's showing up today, Yahoo had many years ago, but it never made its way into the product. And that was that's the problem they faced there. And I do think, though, if they create a better product, people will go to it. I don't agree with you. I've switched a million times emails. And I think if it's a quantumly better, it's a question is it's got to be quantumly better. But I think people will switch if it's a better product.
That's,
it seems.
Yeah, I agree. If there's some, you got to put something in there that people go, wow, I got to have that.
Yeah.
Google tried that with Priority Inbox. It was it was a good idea. It's not really well implemented. Sweep is actually a good idea, but it's hard to find. Nobody
also
knows about
it. There's an opportunity. Google Mail is bloated. Right. Like, yeah. It reminds me, I'm like, where? What, did they just hire all these Microsoft people over there or something? You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge opportunity.
I'll tell you what, anybody who put share next to view and download in all of my picture attachments on Gmail should be shot.
Do you accidentally share a lot of pictures?
At least 4 times a week will accidentally click share.
Whoops.
Because it's put in the middle between view and download on every image attachment in Gmail, and it's infuriating.
One thing we learned this week, and we're going to talk about it in just a bit, we actually learned a lot about Apple and the Apple-Samsung trial, including the fact that Apple actually does care what consumers think and even surveys them, despite all appearances. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Great panel. Boy, this is just, I feel like finally I can ask all these questions that those lousy panels from the last few weeks really couldn't answer. So if you don't mind, we're going to go back in time. Ed Bott is here from ZDNet, longtime friend. Great to have him, Justin Robert Young. And I do want to talk about the hottest book in several generations.
Absolutely.
Exploded. It's sexy. It's smart. It's well-dressed. We'll talk about it in just a second with Justin. Also, my good friend. It's always nice to have you. Patrick Norton from Texilla. How's things going at Texilla?
Good.
How's Discovery treating you?
You know, they seem to be really nice people. I got to go talk to the basically we did a presentation myself and our VP of programming and Jim Lauterbach, our CEO, and it was exciting. There were like 300 people in the room and a few
in Rockville?
In Silver Spring, Maryland.
Silver Spring, yeah. You know, just so you know, I wrote one of the I covered Discovery's beginnings at the Washington Post 100 years ago, and I'll never forget John Hendricks, the founder of Discovery, many years ago. It started to explode a little bit, but it was still tiny, and it got lucky because it got on Liberty Media's stations and stuff. And I said, "What's the secret of your success?" It's the best quote I've ever had in a story ever in my whole life. But I said to Hendricks, who's a quirky guy, the guy who founded Discovery, I said, "What's the big secret to your success?" Kind of a softball. And he said, "Kara, sharks and Nazis. Nazis and sharks."
And it still is. In fact, are you guys doing Shark Week on Texilla?
I was just down in Monterey Bay Aquarium and Hopkins.
See? No, but
Sharks and Nazis.
Sharks and Nazis.
Hey,
next week.
It's the best quote ever in my life that I've used, period. There's never been a better one.
When you find something that works,
don't fix it.
Just keep doing it.
Exactly.
How many years? Shark Week is the longest running.
25 years.
25 years.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
I don't know. You can combine sharks and Nazis some way. I don't know.
Oh, I think you could.
Feed Nazis to sharks.
And the less popular Hitler Weekend, which was canceled after 1 year.
That wasn't so good.
No.
We're brought to you today. And, of course, Kara Swisher is here from All Things D. What a great panel. So much fun. So much insight. I'm just dripping with insight. I should have worn my insight deodorant. Brought to you today by FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks is the ultimate solution for small business owners who don't like doing invoicing. FreshBooks does it and makes it easy. In fact, I was a FreshBooks user for a long time. Amber MacArthur introduced it to me in 2004. And now I think it's 3.5 million users later. FreshBooks is just the way to send and pay invoices. Focus on your work, not your paperwork, with FreshBooks.com. It's wonderful. I'll give you a little tour here if you go to the FreshBooks.com website. The invoice creation is very simple. They email invoices. They will print out an invoice, stamp it, and mail it as well for an additional fee. But what I love is they integrate payments into that email. And believe it or not, your clients do want to pay you. It's just as much of a pain in the butt for them as making the invoice was in the first place. So if you make it easy for them, they pay you faster. And they literally, you will speed up the time it takes to get paid. If they don't pay you, they've got hassle-free invoice follow-up. 90 days, you set that up. Make sure that the client's reminded, you owe me some money. It's very professional looking. If you do time and expenses, it's really easy. They have an app for the iPhone, or there's a web app so you can just start and stop if you're an attorney or you do billable hours, and then it automatically goes right into the invoice. They do multiple currencies. This was great for me because I was working in Canada and the U.S., and so I could bill in the appropriate currency. Great for, in fact, this is the kind of the stealth feature that we don't mention all. You could set up recurring invoices because, you know, your invoice is always the same over and over again, but you can also, if your client goes for it, set up recurring payments. So once you get that set up, it's just kind of like friction-free commerce. It's so awesome. I want you to try it right now. 30 days free. You get all the features of FreshBooks, everything, the multiple clients, multiple users, as many invoices as you want for 30 days absolutely free. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com. If you're in business for yourself, if you're a small business, you want to get paid, this is the easy way to do it. You got to send those invoices. Oh, by the way, your accountant will love you at tax time because it's all collated and makes it very easy. FreshBooks.com. I don't think they ask, but if they do, just say you heard it on Twit. I don't think they ask, but if they do, FreshBooks.
Yell at your computer while you're buying.
It's Twit. I heard it on Twit.
Twit.
So I think this has been fascinating. You know, I'm not normally into these patent lawsuits. They just seem interminable. They go on and on and on. But occasionally we'll get a judge, like in the Oracle Google lawsuit, who's just a character. Or you'll get some very interesting revelations, and that's what we're getting this week in the Samsung-Apple lawsuit.
Nothing says party like a company that is unbelievably secret and vindictive towards reporters having to give all the information in public.
Well, and Apple did go to the judge and say, hey, look, we do not want to give out sales numbers. You know, they give out kind of overall sales numbers at their quarterly analyst reports, but they said, we're not going to. And the judge, I think, agreed to that. The judge was mad, a little bit mad at the Samsung lawyers because she told Samsung, you cannot introduce into evidence your ideas that the iPhone was copied from Sony. We're not going to let you introduce it. So the lawyers apparently, I guess, just went to the press and said, well, just in case. And Judge Koh literally polled each juror individually. Did you see these stories in the press? This is one of them from The Verge.
Is that about the Joni phone?
The Joni phone, yeah. You call it the Joni?
Yeah, she loves Chachi.
That this was not stolen. This was not. You guys at All Things D actually had some of these interesting prototypes. Ina Fried has really done a great job covering this case.
Yeah, she has.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. Those did incredible. I mean, it's interesting. I always am fascinated by what gets a lot of traffic, and they went crazy on this.
Well,
this
it's Apple, and people are very interested. Also, some of the tidbits, like the fact
that I have to tell you, Marissa Mayer is keeping up with Apple in terms of interest by readers.
There you go. You're on top of the big stories.
Yeah. No. Well, just I mean, it's odd what's interesting to people, but anyway.
it is odd, and I guess it's predictable, but.
Sort of, sometimes. I think sometimes some stories are more important and they don't get enough attention.
Well, that I agree with.
This one did. This one, it was interesting, and she did a great job putting a slideshow together, which is people want to see.
And the fact that some of this stuff was done around a kitchen table, I found fascinating.
Yeah, it was a good use of a slideshow. There's no cats or lesbians kissing, and we managed to get traffic.
You know, have to say, I was watching an Olympic slideshow. I was kind of curious. I just wanted to see some pictures because I had missed most of the beach volleyball on TV.
Oh, okay. So
I found somewhere a slideshow of beach volleyball. Very nice images. But every fourth or fifth image, they would put an ad up for a testosterone supplement.
Wow.
And I just thought, this is annoying.
Wow.
And then
to reach the right audience.
Apparently they knew who they were talking to. I don't know how they knew that.
We're not a big slideshow doer, but this case, it worked out fine.
Well, because you're watching and you know that they're billing the advertiser for each time that ad flashes up, even though I'm pressing quit as quick as I can to go to the next picture of Missy May Trainer. Anyway, so I don't like slideshows. I think that's kind of a cheap thing that a lot of blogs do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To build page views. But this was quite interesting. So what else did we learn? Do you pay attention to this, Ed Bott?
I do. In fact, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, one of the revelations that came out from that trial was that Steve Jobs had been publicly saying 7-inch tablet is stupid, stupid, stupid. No, you can't do anything on it. It's very, very publicly saying this. And then there was an email that was introduced into evidence from Eddie Q at Apple, linking to an article from GigaOm by Kevin Toefel, who had said, I think I've been playing with this Samsung 7-inch tablet and it's really awesome. And Eddie Q said, I agree with this. It's really good for reading, for Facebook, for mail, not so good for web browsing, but there's a strong case to be made for this. And I talked to Steve, this was from February of 2011. And he said, I talked to Steve about this around Thanksgiving and he agreed with that. So here you have under oath.
You're kidding. I mean, he did it at D every year. I mean, he'd say, I'm never going to get into phones. And then they'd be introducing the iPhone the next year. And one year, finally, I said, what are you not doing this year? Because you really have to know. But he did that all the time. That was like classic.
But that was kind of a big one because he appeared on an analyst call, which he rarely did, in 2010, and kind of went off. The 7-inch is a terrible idea. It's half the screen real estate of the iPad. It's a terrible idea.
That's how he knew he was serious about it.
Yeah, maybe.
Their 7 inches were terrible, not his.
Not his.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was 7.467, whatever. You know what I mean? It wasn't. I think it's a slightly
different.
It's
almost 8. It's 7.85, I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So.
Well, the rumors. No one knows.
It's bigger.
But this does, you're right, Ed Bott, this does kind of make one think that this is probably going to be announced in September, as some had speculated.
Absolutely.
I don't know what Eddie Q sounds like. I don't remember. But it seems like you should talk like this. Hey, I'm Eddie Q. I'm talking here.
Oh, hey.
I believe there will be a 7-inch market and we should do one, said Eddie Q. I tend to agree. So,
what are you out of your head? Of course.
Whoa. I like that. Whoa. Having used a Samsung Galaxy, I tend to agree. So, anyway, that does make me believe that they are going to do the 7-inch. We're seeing, by the way, a date now. You guys are really good, Kara, at getting the dates for the Apple things.
Yes, we are.
Do you have a date?
I think someone else did. I don't know if we've confirmed it.
For the announcement or the release? September 12th for the announcement.
Yeah.
October 25th for shipping?
Yeah. But again, these are rumors. Was it iMore? Somebody got this story.
Yeah,
I think it was Renee Ritchie.
I don't know what John has written recently, but I was away, so I wasn't paying.
See, I don't do actual reporting. What I do... You know, I need two sources, so I call you guys and somebody else.
I don't know. I'll find out. We'll have the right date. But if that is the one, I think John also said was
Renee Ritchie and iMore. And Renee's been, we've had Renee on the show many times.
Yeah.
Good guy.
He said that week. It's definitely that week for sure.
September 12th. And he said this is from a source who's been right before. This is what everybody always says.
Right.
Yeah, this is the week. We're having our All Things D annual barbecue that week, so I'm hoping
it has to be then.
I'm having everybody come in.
It has to be. September 12th, iPhone 5, September 21st. And if they do what is kind of being called the iPad mini, perhaps it'll be announced at the same time. Their source is not saying that, although it might be confusing if you look at the article. It kind of implies that it is, but their source is not saying that.
So. I don't know if they're going to call it. I mean, it was interesting
because
Tim Cook talked about naming at D this year when we interviewed him at
yes,
the
I loved
D10.
That. Yeah.
They may not give it a name. They may just may not give it a fancy name.
You can't
they may
call just it the call iPad it, mini because then people call the big iPad the iPad Maxi.
Then it gets into.
Joke too low.
Don't go there.
Gets into lady jokes.
Lady jokes.
I don't know. I'm not sure what they're going to call it, but it may not have a special name.
Did Tim explain why they're doing that? Because I thought that was very strange that the new iPad has no name.
I think they decided not to play that game, I guess. I don't know.
So there'll be the new iPhone?
It's the new iPhone, the latest iPhone.
How do you distinguish a 7-inch new iPad from a 10-inch new iPad?
The next iPad. I don't know. I'm not a marketing
genius. Well, I mean, like, they don't. It's not like the MacBook Air 12. You know,
right. I have to say, as somebody who speaks about these products all the time to normal people on the radio,
normies.
I need a name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can make one up for yourself.
I do. I call it the iPad 3 because right. they don't otherwise. What is
they're
the?
They're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. He said it as much as did.
I know. I read.
Why make it simpler for consumers? I mean, I don't know. It's peculiar.
Well, this is going to be a different product, right? Like, I mean, or at least a derivation of the iPod or the iPad, right? This 7-inch creation that we all hope to play
with what Kara just said, like, obviously...
Go ahead. I was going to say,
obviously, like, I'm not a marketing genius because they had the biggest, like, 20 million iPad sales last quarter without having a distinctive name. So people walk in,
they
want a new
show
iPad.
Signs of life.
It could be like Starbucks. I'll take the Grande. I'll take the...
Make up Italian words for it.
When I go to Starbucks, I refuse to use their designate. I just say, give me the little one.
You're such a
give
rebel.
Give me the little one. Give me.
Oh, yeah.
I know,
no, I'm right with you, Kara. I will say, I want a large coffee. And they'll look at me
the small words. Does not have a small word. What's
it's tall.
The
small is tall.
Tall. I don't like that. It disturbs me. So I'm just saying, I'll have an iPad tall. That's what I'll have.
You know what's really bad? Is when you go into a normal coffee shop and they'll say, I have a venti latte. Then they really give you the stink
eye. They punch you right in the nose.
Yeah. We're not Starbucks, sir. You might want to go down
the street. Give me the big iPad. Give me the little iPad.
The big pad. I'll take the big pad. I'll take the little pad.
I'm sure consumers won't have a problem with it.
They'll know. It's just hard. It's not hard for consumers. It's hard for people who talk about this stuff.
Right.
Don't you always have to parenthetically, by which I mean the one released this.
Well, for those of us who cover Microsoft for a living, we hit that problem this week with the whole Metro.
Tell us what happened, Ed. That was bizarre.
bizarre and I want to choose my words carefully on this one.
Don't. I drop bombs, Ed.
My understanding is that Metro AG, a German company that I guess runs... It's grocery stores and also stores that sell technology. So they're kind of like a maybe a Costco or a Walmart thing where they have both food and stuff. And they lodged a copyright complaint against Microsoft. Now, the interesting thing is that Metro Apps does not appear anywhere in Windows 8.
Microsoft says it's a code name.
Yeah, right. They in 2009 it was a code name. In 2010, 11, and 12, it was a product name. And in fact, it's in developer agreements today. If you sign a developer agreement to build an app for Windows 8 today, the agreement says, "And your Metro style apps will have the following features, and they will be priced such and such." And so, Metro style app has been the official name of the part of Windows 8 that describes these new featured apps that use the WinRT API. And so now all of a sudden, boom, with no notice, Microsoft began telling developers and partners and its own employees, do not use the word Metro at all, period. Stop using it. And so last week when Mary Jo Foley and I think Tom Warren, a couple other people found out about this, wrote stories about it, Microsoft responded to it with this boilerplate that says, this is a code name, and we often use code names when we're in development. And as we go forward, we're going to use the commercial names, which is just complete crap.
No, they have ads. It says, look, here it is. Develop a great style app. Should we call it the technology formerly known as Metro? Do we give it a little glyph?
I did that graphic myself and did the little copy edit mark on it, I guess.
I like it. I like it, Ed. You call it a mess, and it is a mess.
Going to come out with a replacement name for it, but they've spent since at least the Build conference when Microsoft unveiled Windows 8, September of 2011, they have been heavily invested in the messaging around Metro-style apps. And for them to throw away that investment in messaging is I don't know.
And that's just why you'd think they'd fight it.
I was going to say, this just seems like a profound failure in trademark search. I mean,
I looked up the Metro trademark on the U.S. Patent and Trademark website. There are literally thousands.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way trademarks work, it's my understanding. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a police officer. But the way I understand these things, you have a trademark in a specific – you can have – conflicting trademarks if you're in different categories. For instance, when I went to Twitter and I said, hey, dude, I'm working here. This is called Twit. And they said, well, no, but you have a trademark in online entertainment and video, and we have a trademark in microblogging, and that's two separate trademarks. My lawyer agreed. And so Eva and I said, well, if you don't do television, I won't do microblogging. Of course, I've done microblogging, and now they're going to do TV. So
yeah, they're partnered with NBC Universal. So
yeah.
I say we bring back Hailstorm. That's what I want.
Hailstorm.
Remember that?
What's that?
I loved it. It was a brand that Microsoft had around cloud, right, Ed? It was so long ago.
It was the original Hailstorm became .net. And they were going to use Hailstorm to describe every web service that existed.
Right.
Several Midwesterners inside of Microsoft pointed out this does not have positive connotations in business in most of the world.
That was the best brand name ever.
Hailstorm.
Exactly. Cold, violent, aggravating. All right. Now we're talking.
Destroying
Windows
crops,
8.
Cars.
The
Windows.
Size of golf balls. I'm talking big.
Eddie Q is back.
that's how old Ed and I are. I have to tell you.
Well, you know, we have a great feature on Windows Weekly where Mary Jo Foley goes back through the past Microsoft code names.
Oh, she'd know.
It's
yeah,
so she, much fun.
You know, the one for, I'm trying to remember the one for MSN, the original one. I can't remember. Marvel? Marvel.
Marvel was the service and Blackbird was the client.
Wow.
Yeah, Marvel was one of the MSN names for sure.
So Microsoft has a long, happy history of making up code names that it doesn't use. Longhorn, you know, there were a lot of them. But it does seem as if they had thought they could use Metro. Why they didn't fight this? This isn't it. What did you say? It's a cafe, Ed?
The only thing store. That I... No, it's a very large retail outlet. And the only
that's
thing that
that's not
I can
a
think
conflict.
Of,
I think
is, you know, Microsoft has been involved in patent litigation around the Xbox and in Germany, and they've also been involved in a lot of antitrust stuff in the EU. And I can just imagine Steve Ballmer throwing a chair and saying, I do not want to pay another goddamn dollar to another goddamn German lawyer.
It's Danish, not German. Metro.dk, or maybe this is a different one.
Metro AG. AG. They're all over the EU.
And that actually is relevant because you don't want to be – Germany is notoriously kind of anti-corporation.
Exactly.
So you could lose in court in Germany just because you're Microsoft.
And Microsoft has lost a number of very high-profile, very high-priced legal cases in the EU. And so they might have said, you know – but I don't know. They're not talking about it. And the public statement that they made was so transparently untrue.
Right.
I think they could actually have won some sympathy – if they had told at least a redacted version of the truth here and said, you know, somebody has confronted us with a trademark allegation here, and we don't think it's warranted, but given our history in the EU, we don't feel that it's worth it to, you know, potentially risk delaying this product and throwing
there you
our-
go.
A situation that's the statement that they should have made, and why they came out with this nonsense statement that they did is beyond me. And nobody will talk to they, Microsoft and their PR people have basically gone dark on this subject.
No, it's just how Microsoft's been running itself lately. It's a very strange company.
I think Microsoft's a code name. Eventually, they'll release the commercial name for the company.
It's the fifth largest retailer in the world, according to revenues. So it isn't an insignificant trademark.
And they have been involved in some high-profile litigation over their trademarks. But if they won't talk to anyone about it, this could also be a bluff. This could also be a negotiating tactic where they, you know, maybe Metro wanted some money for a settlement of this thing, but the money that they asked for was too much. I don't know. You know, we could speculate. It would be irresponsible not to speculate.
That's our job, and we're doing it well, I must say. What else did we, to get back to the original topic, what else did we learn about Apple this week? We learned that they do consumer testing and surveys, mm-hmm. which surprised me. I thought they just did everything in a vacuum.
No.
Apparently not.
No. It's like, what do you think? It's like Willy Wonka?
Yeah. I think that's what Steve Jobs wanted us to think.
They just go on Vision Quest.
Yeah.
They're a real live company. They have, I don't know if they have free food in their cafeteria or not, but I don't think they do.
I think you pay.
I paid.
They always make me pay.
I paid.
Yeah.
Anyway, of course they do these things. They have to understand, you know, on some level. I think they do a lot out of instinct and what they think is good around their design concepts, but they certainly have to do regular testing, and it makes sense. Why wouldn't they?
Apple announced that 3 million downloads of OS X Mountain Lion, which came out last week, in 4 days. They say it's the most successful OS X release in their history. It's cheap. It's $20. Apple has never put copy protection on their operating systems. They've never really paid any attention to where
they
you start installing it. They make hardware.
They don't need to. They make the hardware. If they're, you know, aside from the Hackintosh market, which is 1/1000th of 1%, they already know that you paid them on average $1,500 for the hardware. So they're basically, you know, the $20 is, they, you know, that's jump.
In fact, why charge at all? I guess because you can.
Especially versus the other side of it, which is they want as many people with the newest operating system so developers can develop super cool things that make people want to buy Mac.
You know, one thing that that we also learned in the trial last week, Apple has spent $1 billion on marketing the iPhone and the iPad.
Oh, I did. I saw those numbers. Those were very interesting.
Yeah, that's...
More on the iPhone than the iPad, but the iPhone's had a longer time.
Right, that's been 5 years versus 2 years.
Or two, yeah.
Yeah, only two, believe it or not.
Seemed to be doing something right.
473 million on the iPad. I think that's what the number was. It was huge amount of money.
500
Well, and you've seen a few Apple ads on the Olympics this week. Not very good ads. I mean, what'd you think of the Nervous Genius?
I gave up after.
It was like a sitcom. It was like a bad acting.
I just gave up on. We don't have cable. And after restarting the stream 17 times during the road race last weekend, I kind of gave up on the Olympics for a while.
Expected to see Jerry Seinfeld and Bill Gates walk.
Where's the churro? Where's the churro? I ask you.
That was
Corinthian leather. Right?
I'd forgotten about that commercial. That was how do you even
it was
describe
a series
that?
Of them. Wasn't it?
But there was really two.
Two,
and then they decided this is not a good idea. The last one ended with Bill and Jerry going off in the sunset. Jerry says, "Let's go get a churro," and then there was something about Bill shaking his butt.
Yeah, a little butt wiggle.
Jerry said, "Well, give me a sign," and Bill went like, this.
"Yeah, something like that."
That was just.
It was like a David Lynch movie. It was just weird. Like I didn't know what was happening. I had no clue.
You know, if Bill Gates had brought out a little oxygen mask.
I like the Apple ads. I'm the only person who loves
the new ones, the Genius ones.
He's adorable. He's cute. I thought he was cute.
Oh, you like the Genius? You know that's Ferris Bueller.
He's cute. It's cute. Yeah. They were like human. I mean, usually Apple ads are so cool, and they weren't. Right. They weren't cool, and I like that. They were adorkable. I called them adorable. Yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, it is an interesting, you know, it is, no matter what it is a change of tact, right? That it's not the cool, austere, minimalist, here are features that you can use in daily life.
The question is, who are they aimed at?
Walmart shoppers.
People love that, Gene.
My mom.
Shoppers, yeah.
Now, my mom and my stepdad they go every Saturday like it was a recreational hobby to the Apple Store to take training lessons for their iPhone and their new MacBooks. And they go every time, they learn something, they love it, they enjoy it, they enjoy that experience, which is somewhat unique to Apple. You know, it is part of their identity.
Not if Microsoft, Sony, and Samsung can help it. All three of them have created stores. Duplicates,
but nothing nearly as successful.
Yeah, we don't identify those.
It's not easy to do, I guess.
He reminded me of a lot of Apple geniuses I've known. I thought I don't know. I liked it.
Young, underpaid.
Well, that's another story.
Expert.
But some of them, I ran into one. I put up one of the geniuses had a tattoo of Apple on their arm. I said, you're going a little too far.
No. Look at this guy sleeps in his Apple shirt. He wears his Apple badge to the door.
How that's cute he is. My kid's like that someday. Isn't he cute? He's adorable.
He's a nice boy. He's a nice boy.
I want my kids to be like nice and helpful like this. This is nice. He's a nice boy.
One of the things I've learned through the years is do not underestimate Apple when they do something that seems odd or off kilter. You go back and read all the people who panned the original iPad as an oversized iPhone and said it wouldn't work. You know, it makes really interesting reading to go back and look at those 2010 reviews. And you can go back and look at just from the product point of view, but also from the advertising point of view. I'm also sure that they've done plenty of research and maybe even some focus groups to get these ads.
I'm sure.
Properly calibrated.
I think the question is that they're not avant-garde. You know,
they're not for the crazy ones.
Yeah, I mean, it goes from a style of ads that you would imagine Don Draper pitching to a style of ad that you would imagine Don Draper rejecting.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that
those were Draper rejects.
That Peggy would come in there and he would just coolly look at her and dismiss her from the office if she brought up the Apple Genius thing. So I think they're fine. I just think that they're not aimed. They're aimed at a different set of humanity, and I think it is a set of humanity that watches the Olympics. You have just a wide variety of people that are watching these games, and that's who they're trying to talk to.
We're going to talk when we come back. Apparently Henry Blodgett doesn't share your respect for Apple. Ed Bott, he says the iPhone 5 is going to be a disaster. Oh, wait a minute, let's get this one here real quickly.
Oh, no.
This is a Microsoft ad. I don't think this ad ever aired.
How much much do you think this advanced operating environment is worth? Wait just 1 minute before you answer. Watch as Windows integrates Lotus 1-2-3 with Miami Vice. Now we can take this Ferrari and paste it right into Windows Write. Now how much do you think Microsoft Windows is worth? Don't answer. Wait until you see Windows Write and Windows Paint and to listen to what else you've
Steve Ballmer in a very ill-fitting suit, and it looks like Windows 1.0, actually. I don't know. What version of Windows
is that?
That was one of the ads they do for their sales conference.
Sales conference.
Right. There's so many great ads. And I wish there were an archive. The CES ads, too, that they used to. Remember the one with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer driving a Volkswagen? Da-da-da-da. And they see an old Sun micro server sitting by the road, and they throw it in the back seat, and it starts to smell. And
they did a good one for D one year with the guy from Napoleon Dynamite.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. I like that stuff. And unfortunately, because of rights issues, most of that stuff never surfaces, never sees the light of day.
Yeah, unfortunately. We had a wonderful one from Kodak that is, I wish we could use. We don't have the rights to it, but it's wonderful.
Exactly. We'll take a break. We'll come back in just a bit, talk about the iPhone 5. There's a ton of news this week. We'll get to it all, I promise you. The Olympics and Twitter and NBC. There's more. The new dig. We'll talk. The new cloud player from Amazon. But first, let me take you on a little visit to something. I want to do a Steve Martin here and say, the new Squarespace is here. Very exciting. Squarespace 6 has launched. Now, you know we talk about Squarespace all the time. The best hosting for your site ever. Fantastic. But now it's even better because the new Squarespace content management system has launched, Squarespace 6, that just makes it's very modern. The templates are gorgeous. They're doing something now called responsive design, which we spent on our new site over $100,000 to do. You can get this for, $8 a month. So the idea of responsive design, and it makes sense in this world where everybody's mobile, is that your page looks the same no matter what the device is. It resizes appropriately. So that's why, for instance, when you drag an image to Squarespace, it generates 7 different sizes, one for every appropriate device. So it looks great. Your site will look great on everything from a 27-inch screen to a 3.5-inch iPhone. The ability to drag and drop and design. I know you guys on NSFW love this. You let one shot Squarespace sites all the time.
Yeah, well, because Squarespace offers
so fun.
The free.
You get 2 weeks free with no trial. Credit card or anything.
So on our show, we have people make funny websites all the time, really, I think Squarespace. We've talked to them, and they love.
They don't mind.
Yeah, well, because they love people getting to use the tools. So when they know that they want to go and have a serious project, that they want to use this product, they know how to use it. They're familiar with everything that they can do. And let me tell you this: that responsive design stuff. Like maybe 2 years ago, my friends at Upstatement, which is a fantastic design firm out in Boston, very good friends of mine, just did the Boston Globe redesign that introduced that idea.
Really? Is that where that came from?
Yeah, and now this is available
everybody
on the consumer level.
Yeah.
And that's insane. That's great.
Because it's hard.
It is extraordinarily hard.
Yeah.
And it is so well done on the new Squarespace.
What's nice, no two Squarespace sites look alike. You can't tell it's a Squarespace site. You have the 300-plus Google type fonts, the really easy customization. But also, if you know CSS, you can they've got a pop-out CSS editor with the code coloring and all that stuff. So it's really – this is an entirely new product, completely rewritten, brand new code base, HTML5. CSS3, JavaScript foundations. This is the best. And it's hosting plus the software. So you're going to get an incredible site. And the best part is the pricing. So let me exit out of this video. And by the way, workshops.squarespace.com, they've got training free for you. So you can take webinars and learn how to use this. But if you go to squarespace.com right now, you can sign up for a free account. 2 weeks free, do everything, all the features, import your blog from WordPress, Typepad, or Blogger, and all that. But then, if you decide you like it, the pricing is phenomenal, and I don't know how they're doing this. They have yearly plans, they have month-to-month plans. The best deal, of course, is the yearly plan. In fact, it's an extra special good deal if you use the offer code TWIT8, TWIT8 for the month of August, the eighth month, TWIT8. because we'll give you 10% off your first purchase. So if you buy a yearly plan, that's 10% off for the whole year. And look at these prices. The basic plan, $8 a month. But the deal really here to me is $16 a month. You get unlimited pages, galleries, and blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. It is a pro site for $16 a month. And then apply the TWIT8 offer code, and you can take 10% off of that. They'll also hook you up automatically with your custom domain, so you can have that domain name that goes that, you know, you pick. They'll register it for you. They'll hook it up and make it all at no charge. Squarespace.com. The new Squarespace is here, and you've got to try this. You've got to try this. Squarespace.com. If you decide to buy, just do me a favor. Use the offer code TWIT8, and you'll save 10%. Love it. Facebook stock down to under $20 now. Is that the right price, or are they a deal?
It's probably the right price. Because it's the price.
That's the price. Well, it is the right price for now. But I'm just wondering if there's an upside to buying a Facebook. I don't buy tech stock, and I can't, so I don't know, and I don't care.
If you look at PE multiples, it's actually still pricey.
But you Amazon is too.
Yeah, they all are. I'm not Apple and Google. They're very quick. I think they're 10.
But they're
10
old companies. They've been around a long time.
Yeah, they're doing rather well, aren't they?
I think
the two of them are really strong companies now in terms of profits and revenues. If you're looking at it as a growth stock, it's not very good price. If you're looking at it as maybe there's some problems, it's perfectly priced. I think we'll see. I think they've got to start showing some real growth in their revenue, like heavy growth. And users is harder because they've sort of reached almost as many users as they can get to, probably.
Well, and we've seen some revelations in their 10K. They said 83 million of their accounts are bogus. They're spam or duplicates or mistakes.
And that seems actually low to me.
That actually seems
pretty good.
That's only like 10%.
8.7%.
I like that you use revelations.
Revelations.
Well, maybe not such a revelation, especially if you were in the know, but they also said our ad sales are softening. We're down again.
I'll tell you what. I actually had a very positive ad experience on Facebook the other day. I found.
Did you buy
an ad
for the Diamond Club?
For the Diamond Club? No. We have not bought any
no
ads.
No ads. That's you haven't bought any ads.
Well, number one, I'm not. I mean, Patricia Harkins Bradley is the writer of the Diamond
Club. I'm sorry.
Club.
I keep conflating the two of you.
I'm just a fan, you know.
Yeah.
I'll say so. I bought this poster. It was like a Spark Art poster or something of their. Yeah. They did a screening of Blazing Saddles. And I love Blazing Saddles. So I bought their like specialty thing. And then the next day, literally my entire timeline was Spark Art posts.
Wow.
And it was like it went from me being like,
you gave
hey,
them a signal.
That was great. I had a great buying experience thanks to Facebook. Cheers to you guys. You guys are awesome. To the next day being like, you could not have ruined this in any more profound
wow.
way.
Oh, dear. It was probably just automated, too.
Yeah.
You know, I get gay cruises. I'm not even going to click on any of those.
Well, you know, it's weird. I get gay cruises. Maybe it's the police outfit.
Let's go. Let's you and I go. That would be fun.
I'm a macho man.
That'd be
I
one
would
hell of a gay cruise.
I would pay anything to go on a gay cruise with you, Leo.
Why? Why? What would be fun about that?
You would be a lot of fun on a gay cruise. You just would.
What is a gay cruise? Have you been on a gay cruise?
I have.
Is a gay cruise like?
Well, I went on a lesbian one once, and
I'd like to go on a lesbian cruise.
A bunch of gay people on a boat. I don't know what to tell you.
Sorry.
The lesbians are different than the gay men.
They're different.
I've never been on a gay man cruise. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's
you can
go.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. So
I know,
I'm looking.
But with you, I would do it. It would be fun.
All right. Deal. I don't know how you can explain that to Megan, but okay.
No, she'll be fine, believe me.
Now, if you could arrange to do a TWIT broadcast from the cruise.
Oh, my God, that would be fantastic.
I'll do that. We've done TWIT on a cruise.
No,
we've
that would
done,
be fabulous.
We've done TWIT on cruises before. We have,
big users of technology, big early users. I had a chapter in my first book about AOL. It was the gay community. It was integral
to
the growth of AOL.
Oh, it's huge.
It was really important. Very early adopters.
Well educated.
Heavy users of, yes, heavy users.
Disposable income. It's everything you dream of and more.
Yeah.
Diamond Club.
Early innovations around.
Yeah.
Diamond Club.
Diamond Club.
Yes.
I don't know. There may be some stuff going on here, but I'm liking this.
Okay.
Diamond Club.
All right. So
this is, let me just show you a little bit. I'll go to my books because I, of course, have a copy. Patricia Harkins Bradley, she tweeted me. I was really, I have to say, I was
starstruck, right?
Starstruck. Oh, I can't, you know, this is a flaw, by the way, in iBooks. I cannot open this on a desktop. I have to go do it on a mobile device. I have it. I downloaded it. But yeah. I have to sync it with an iPhone or an iPad to read the book.
Well, yeah, it goes wirelessly, right? Through iCloud.
Well, I don't care. I have it on my computer. Yes. I want to read
you
it.
You can't just double-click it.
When you have a craving
it.
For Diamond Club, it needs to be satisfied.
It needs to be sated post-haste.
So what's the story with this?
Okay.
Well, I'll read the description. When Brianna Young discovers that Roman Dial, the man she built a relationship and a multimillion-dollar company with, has gotten married to another woman. He texts her.
No, she finds out on the social network that they both built fullydatable.com.
Wait a minute, thank you. Apparently our entire staff has purchased this book.
they're not alone.
Yeah. No, and it's a great, how many, do you have sales figures?
I have numbers for you. All right, do catch people up on what exactly this is about.
No,
you don't want to? Okay.
Not until we've really teased the hell out of them.
Okay.
So here, if you look, this is the book on an iPad where really it is better. For one-handed reading.
Patricia
Harkins Bradley. Now, she's a little shy because she's hiding behind a bush or something there.
I think it's a tree.
She's a English teacher and ex-wife, mother of three in San Francisco. But I have to say, when you read the first few pages, and I wish they had a sample. Do they have a sample?
Yeah, they have a sample, yeah. You can get a
sample. Because you should really, bastard. I would have sworn the person next to me said the words, but they came from my mouth, my body, my soul, my right hand that dropped the cup of overpriced coffee, probably a tall, maybe a venti,
yeah.
On my well-worn Converse sneakers. My left hand dropped my iPhone on the concrete, sending it dancing down the street. My iPhone. That's where I read it. Just a few simple words that changed my life forever. One simple push message that sounded the custom chime of my fully dateable app. Roman Dial is now married. To Bonnie Barrow. Married, not engaged. Married. Wait a minute, the best is line
like,
in here.
Is this like 50 Shades of Grey for geeks?
Exactly! Yes. And by the way, number five, it was number four, but...
Just a couple hours ago, it dropped from number four to number five.
On the iBookstore, I mean, of all books, which is kind of sad because it was dominating.
There's a big market for this.
This is so much better. I don't know if you read 50 Shades of Grey. I did.
No, you know, I didn't. I'm like one of the last people.
This is so much better. Listen to this line. Where is it? About the friend accepting his friend?
Yeah, no, here we go. It's...
I can have it speak it.
There we go. It starts with Roman Dial's soft brown hair.
Roman Dial's... Wait a minute. Let me just select the whole thing and let the iPad do what it does best. let's have the iPad read this.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute, slow down. No, slow down. Do it again. Between my alabaster thighs.
Oh, all right, that's enough. And we're moving on.
Brown hair bobbed back and forth in the golden rays of the San Francisco sun as I accepted his friend request between my alabaster thighs.
It's not as sexy when the iPad
says you.
It's better. It's better.
Yeah. So, all right, sales figures.
Yeah.
I just want to let we are
there's
going...
a reason, Kara, why we're talking about this. You'll
yes.
learn.
I get it.
Are you getting it already? You're getting it. I think.
I got it when I heard alabaster.
You're so smart. You're so smart. You cannot fool you.
Who the hell has alabaster thighs?
People in romance novels.
Right. I have alabaster thighs. You'd know that if you went on a gay cruise with me.
Well, you'd have sun abused thighs in that case.
Yeah, well, I like short shorts.
Alabaster. They wouldn't be alabaster if you went on a cruise.
All right, do we want to explain it or do you want me to say
what are the sales figures?
Okay. I can say that it's in fact over 9,000.
Jeez Louise. Now, it's 99 cents, so it's a considerable deal compared to the $9.99 for 50 Shades of Grey.
In fact, as of yesterday, we're getting, we haven't got the stuff for today, but it is over 12,000 copies that have been sold. Since we put it up.
Now, where does the money go? Because I know it doesn't go to Patricia Harkins Bradley.
Well, yeah. Can I
explain
what this is? All right. So here's the deal. About a month and a half ago, Brian Brushwood, my co-host on NSFW show, released Scam School Book 2 and realized that the top 10 of the iBook store was a ton of super cheap erotic fiction since 50 Shades of Grey came out.
Totally changed the publishing world.
Absolutely. Yeah. So John Tilton had an idea, and it kind of matched with something that I had just read about, which I found fascinating, which was back in 1969, Mike McGrady of the Newsday, the paper Newsday, released a teamed with 18 other writers to each separately write a chapter of a romance novel, because those were really coming
into vogue. Naked Came the Stranger.
Naked Came the Stranger. That was the name of the book.
And it's a huge hit.
A huge thing in and of its own right.
I remember this very well. I was alive.
Well, good. At the time. It's good. So we said, okay, so how do we update this? Number one, users are the content creators. So instead of having the staff of a newspaper write it, we'll have our listeners write it, our NSFW listeners write it. Number two, the New York Times bestseller list are now lists like Amazon and iBooks, even though the New York Times bestsellers still exist. But for us...
But what are they going to do? Check bookstores? Like, people buy books at bookstores?
Absolutely. And number three, that a secret isn't a secret anymore. I mean, they kept it a secret that Penelope Ash, their pseudonym, was...
They didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, until they revealed it in this big, talk show kind of thing. We decided we're just going to... secrets are public. We can yell and scream about this all we want, and nobody will really know because no one will really care.
Right.
And so we released this on Monday. This is all user created. All of our users wrote all these chapters. We basically created.
Wait a minute. All the did you write the first one? Because I have to say, I detect a little bit of your style.
I may or may not have written the line
alabaster thighs.
Accepting a friend request between alabaster thighs.
Yeah.
Were you sober at the times?
I'm telling you, Pulitzer Prize. I'm telling you.
So basically, the experiment is, and now that it's a success, we can take this from
maybe
Frank.
the Booker Prize.
Yes,
yes. The Booker Prize. For erotic fiction.
We can now take it from like the silly we ran a prank thing to the insufferable this is why it's art explanation.
You got articles there. The Telegraph wrote about it.
Yeah.
You're getting. Everybody's writing about this. This is a very interesting thing.
Yeah. The Daily Dot wrote about it. Yeah.
So the money goes to what?
Okay. So here's the thing. We expected this. Like, we've run a lot of these stupid
things. It's starting to be a lot of money, is my point.
Absolutely. And so, like, when people asked us initially, like, oh, well, what are you going to do with the money? It's like, what do you mean? What are we going to do with $500?
We'll have a party.
We're gonna make some books for the people that wrote it, maybe get some t-shirts and throw a party for people that contributed and want to come.
Now you're talking Kickstarter money.
It has since become significantly more than $500. Yeah. So on the NSFW show this week, we're going to talk about it. We're going to figure it out. But it's been incredibly humbling and amazing that people wanted to kind of get in on this silly thing. And basically the idea was, what would happen if you made a erotic fiction novel in a post 50 Shades of Grey world that very specifically and stringently eliminated plot and character development and just added nothing but three scoops of sex?
It's 31 pages.
No.
Okay.
That's a mistake.
That's a mistake.
There's an error on the Apple site. Believe me, you get plenty of excitement in this book.
I was going to say, like, I was that's why I was really curious. I'm like, you've 9,000 sales of a 31-page document, so I feel better knowing it's people.
Oh, no.
It's 250
pages, and I will say this. We have a lot of...
sex.
It's nothing but sex. It is absolutely 100% sex.
Except for the friend requests?
Else.
Or is that a metaphor?
Can I just...
You know what's interesting here? Can I just say here is I've noticed, I've just recently, because of these iBooks and reading of these things, I found out a friend of mine who I had no idea read romance novels had hundreds of them on the iBooks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is something they don't want to read in public necessarily on a plane, but when they're on the iBooks or wherever, whatever they're reading, their Kindles, they like to read them. So you'd see a lot more of this kind of... It just is a really interesting trend because you can sort of read what you want to read. But I was shocked this person had so many romance novels. I had no idea this was an interest or whatever, but she heaves her breasts or whatever the names of those things are.
It's insane.
It's really interesting. iBooks changes everything because you can actually enjoy these.
Well, what it's done, it's done for erotic fiction, what the VCR did for porno, right?
All right.
It's made it so that you can take it home.
You know, although there was a story about people watching porn on their iPads recently. Like now people are bringing them into coffee shops or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is different. This is reading because it really does hide. You could be reading it in public and people don't see what you're reading.
You don't have the big...
The porn stuff is a little more problematic,
obviously. No, I'm just saying, but the VCR You know, used to be, again, yeah, I'm old enough to remember this, you had to go to a movie theater to watch porn.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Fred Willard.
But even before the digital publishing breaks in, you're still talking about romance novels, the statistics, something like every 30 seconds somebody buys a romance novel.
Yeah.
This is just off the supermarket shelves and bookstores and stuff. I mean, some of the bookstores.
Imagine iBooks, they're going to be even bigger because then people who sort of ferret them away. Because people, this person was embarrassed to be reading them, but wasn't because they were on. It was really interesting because they have an interest in. I knew all the writers and super.
The Romance Writers of America. They have this. The industry's net revenue decreased from $10.27 billion in 2009 to $10.11 billion in 2010. But I mean, it's
going to go up. But the problem is they're cheap. They're only, you know, they're less expensive. Well, you don't make as much.
Well, and really, that was the idea of the Diamond Club, was that once we kind of elevated into the top 10, would we be please pardon the pun, sticky, and just absolutely, you know, be part of the reading list of people who just serially buy these books. And we've seen some backlash of people that, you know, are giving it one-star reviews, that this is not what their kind of book is. They like more character development and plot in their romance novel. But compared to what we are selling, it, and compared to what books like 50 Shades of Grey get in one-star reviews, we're really not all that abnormal for other low-cost
I think it's significantly
e-books.
Better written, to be honest with you, than most of the stuff I've read.
It is not actually that very funny. Like, our listeners are very, very, very funny. All I'm going to say is that there is a chapter that involves a veteran of the Iraq War who lost his leg that had me, I was on a flight from Washington, D.C. back to SFO this week, that had me laughing so hard I embarrassed myself in front of the entire plane.
Somebody told me there is a character in that book.
Yeah.
With a name somewhat like mine.
There is likely a character.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Your name has a lot of possibilities, Leo.
Oh, it does.
Well, I know that there is, of course, the main character is named Brianna Young, and she has a tryst with somebody named Justine Brushwood. it's all littered with NSFW references, but it's been...
Did you edit this in any way or vet it? Or you
sweet
just,
Lord, no.
You just threw it all in, so you haven't even read it.
No, I read half of it.
Okay.
And that was after it came out.
So you don't even know what's happening.
No, I shared an experience with the rest of America this week, and I got to read The Diamond Club for the first time.
So from Mars Rover to porny novels, fantastic.
Oh, we cover the
That's what technology
waterfront.
Is all about.
We cover the waterfront.
No, absolutely. But the one cool thing that is going to be interesting for anybody who's into e-publishing and wants to know more about this stuff is, unlike a lot of authors or publishers, we have literally no reason to keep any of this information secret. We want to get a week's worth out because we think that's going to be the best data set to kind of show what a hit ebook on the iBook store is.
Right.
But on the next NSFW show, we will, every red cent will be accounted for, every copy.
Oh, who cares? It's 99 cents. Come on.
Oh, no. I don't mean like where it's going to go, but just like what it's sold in, what per day, I think people who are interested
in
e-publishing, I think will like that data.
And, the charts, we know this from podcasts on iTunes, are ballistic. So they're very much about what happened most recently as opposed to,
if, let's say, we just dropped to number 5 today from number 4. We were at number 4 all week. If everybody on Twit went and bought it now, it would probably go back up to number 4.
Right.
Hint.
This is podcast. This is ebook.
Ebook only. Yeah. There's no print of this.
No. I think we might do something for the people that wrote it. We're probably going to do hardcovers for them, just so as a thank you, and so they can have it, and maybe we'll
treasure
sell
it
them or something. Yeah, I don't know. Or if there's any publishers out there you want to pick up the print rights, the Diamond Club, holler at your boy.
I actually know the guy who optioned 50 Shades of Grey. Dana Brunetti optioned that for Focus Features, and
that's right.
And Dana's a great friend of the... maybe he'd be interested in an option of the Diamond Club.
Talk to me.
I'll talk to him.
Talk to me. Here we go. I'll
I'm sure you won't get what E.L. James got, but... No.
That's fine. You can own Star Wars and Spaceballs.
So, it's kind of apt, actually.
All right, then.
So Henry Blodgett, writing in Business Insider, pure link bait, but I loved it. If the iPhone... If the iPhone really looks like this, Apple may be screwed. His point is that it isn't much of a change.
It's that really hurt iPhone 4S sales.
Yeah, the iPhone 4S was even less of a change.
This is a pure link bait title.
The one thing that has changed is you've got the Galaxy S3. Samsung's right. announced it's going to have the Galaxy Note 2, an unbreakable 5.5-inch screen available 4 days before the Apple announcement.
I'll believe it's unbreakable after I use one for a month.
I know. If anybody could break it, you will.
I got to say, the Galaxy S3 is a gorgeous phone.
I love it.
But it is big.
That's big? You think that's big?
I put phones in my pocket.
The problem with the iPhone is it's small. I mean, I think that this is... Now, the new iPhone is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But still not as big.
The rumored new iPhone that everyone is reporting on.
Yeah.
With the rumored
new...
big? The dock connector is the part that
big to you?
Bothers me the most about the
iPhone.
Are
you using an
iPhone?
I'm using a...
What do you use,
4S.
Ed? Are you using a Windows phone? Of course you are.
Yeah, I'm using the only Windows phone that Verizon has. Verizon, which is the worst...
It's not a very good one. Yeah.
World.
Yeah.
Yep.
There we go.
So you say my phone's big. I say your phone's tiny.
Well, all right. We don't have to start name-calling.
I would rather have a 1280 by 800 screen. I would rather have, you know, all the... how much thinner this phone is.
You are the worst phone reviewer on the planet. I say this with love and affection, but you change phones every 15 minutes.
That's so I can review them.
Yes.
I know, but I mean,
and
like,
you love all of them.
That's what makes me a good phone reviewer is actually I commit.
For 2 weeks?
I'm like the bacon in breakfast. I'm committed. I'm not like some egg. I am committed. I've used this phone for months.
You're totally the chicken, not the pig. It's unusual. I should say that is the biggest testament for this phone is that you have actually held on to it for months instead of being on your seventh phone.
And I think that other thing that's changed since the last iPhone a year ago is the app ecosystem on Android is now roughly equivalent, wouldn't you say?
The biggest issue with Android, is you're still talking about like 90%. The number I saw a few weeks ago was 80 or 85%, 90% of the Android phones are still at like 2.1.
Yeah. It's
ones are. But if you buy a new one, you'll have
sure. But how many people are buying the? Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question about how
100% of iPhone 3s are at the old iOS. What does that mean?
Well, no, there's a higher.
Here. I think Henry likes to write those kind of headlines.
I know it's blink.
What's interesting here is that they're. These new especially the Samsung phones, are really good.
Yes,
and they're not as glitchy and they're not as wonky. I mean, a lot of the problem with early Android phones is they were incredibly wonky.
They crash all the time. Yeah.
And so I think these are. I mean, the challenge for Apple is that they don't change a lot. I mean, for the first time, I saw I think one of the Samsung phones, and I'm an Apple user for years and years in terms of the iPhone and stuff like that. I just happen to like it better. But for the first time, I was a little bit jealous, and it never happens, I have to say. It was the first time I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, what was on it. And I doubt I will switch, but it definitely, they'll have to do something special in this new version for me to buy it. And it definitely was the first time I thought, well, they somehow have hidden the wonkiness of Android in a good way. So that's really the point, is that they really have to up the game this time rather than just make small changes. I think probably
And do you think they will? I mean, they're notorious. Apple's notorious for surprising everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't it what is happening inside the iPhone that is kind of the edge there, that even if they have a minimalist and familiar design, that means less than what is, you know, in their ecosystem with the App Store and
what
with iOS 6?
Siri's going to work?
I think the iPhone is looking a little older. That's all. It just is looking a little less slick than it was when it first came out. And I think because phones are so interchangeable now, as Leo is probably the most use of them, but I think people want something fresh. And so fresh doesn't mean a totally different thing, but something that's not maybe a little thinner. I would prefer a thinner phone, maybe a bigger screen. I think it's kind of
LTE, which I guess the iPhone will probably have.
But. Yeah.
Bigger screen. It has to have. This screen is not.
It's too small.
It's too small, and I think that's probably thinner. And no matter what's inside, I think people want slightly different form factor. Just not tons, but just you want something fresh. It hasn't been freshened up since it was since a long time.
Well, maybe we do agree with Henry because the new iPhone
it's not screwed.
Looks very similar to the old one, and in fact has one feature that I think a lot of people are going to be upset about. It changes the age-old 30-pin connector for a 19-pin connector, that's, again, all rumors.
Yeah, and that's what it kind of comes down to. Puts the headphone connector on the bottom of the phone next to the smaller dock connector, which may or may not work electrically with all of the existing hardware, with or without an adapter. I don't know. I'd be curious. At this point, does Apple think the design is iconic and they're afraid to change it?
No, I don't think. No, not at all. The thing about the thing, I was just irritated by my new MacBook. I had to change out everything, which is irritating. But I don't think that's going to stop people from buying this. It's a question of there's a lot of very fresh, exciting phones from using the Android system. And so that's, you know, and they will be from Windows. And so the question is not from RIM, obviously, this Christmas again. But it's a question of whether, you know, the regular users want something fresher. I know I do. Mm-hmm. I'm a very loyal iPhone user.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, my buddy Steve Kovac works for Silicon Alley Insider, and like
he was fighting with Henry. He was fighting with Henry over this.
Oh, was he?
Steve said, "Yeah." If you scroll down, you'll say my colleague Steve says I'm nuts. More link bait, by the way.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. Yeah. Exactly. To link to another thing inside of Silicon Alley Insider. Yeah. But no, between these headlines and slideshows, it comprises of 25% of my conversation with him.
Microsoft has announced a new mouse that's just really interesting. What do you think about the Wedge Touch mouse there, Edbot?
I like it. It's interesting, and that's one of the things in terms of hardware design that they've done really, really well through the years. I've got a couple of the Arc Touch mouses here, and they're really neat, and so they have a good history with multi-touch technology. But I'm actually more interested in that keyboard, especially for Windows 8, because I know a lot of the complaints that people have had about Windows 8 is that the you know, the interface with a mouse and a keyboard is somewhat awkward, and even when you learn it, it just doesn't sort of sink in. But if you, this one will have dedicated keys on it that are mapped to the Windows 8 interface, and so instead of having to, you know, move your mouse up into a corner and, you know, and make the menu appear, you'll just be able to hit one of those dedicated keys and either go to the start screen or share something or search, and so that I think is something that might take care of some of the objections that people have to the Windows 8 interface. But you know, they've always, Microsoft has been doing great keyboards and mice for a long time, almost unheralded.
So I don't, this has a regular Windows key on it with the new Windows logo, but there's another keyboard I think that has a key for the charms, for instance, which would be very nice. It's kind of hard to navigate to the charms.
Right. I suggested this at one point that instead of right now it's Windows key plus C is how you make the charms menu appear. And I thought, and I still think, that the tapping the Windows key should just make that menu appear, and then if you tap it again, it'll take you to the start screen.
That's a nice idea.
And in fact, I'm hoping if anyone's listening and you're out there a developer, I'd like that utility to be available so that I could remap those keys, on the Windows 8 interface, and collectively, you know, together we will make a small fortune.
we do have a date now for Windows 8. It'll be October. What is it? 26th?
26th, the day after the new iPad Mini goes on sale. Judging by what you said earlier,
correct, and the interesting thing is that Microsoft's always said that the Surface, our Windows RT version of Surface, will ship the same day.
Same day, and then the and oddly, which that surprised me, that the more conventional Windows 8 Pro version, which is kind of a, you know, it's a PC, the tablet form factor, and you already have those and the hinged touch keyboard and such, but that will take another 90 days to come about, and that was surprising to me. But
I wonder if that's to protect OEMs, maybe, so that because Microsoft's maybe no.
No, I think it has probably more to do with power management. You know, the new, you know, they there's probably some custom circuitry that's going in there. They have a lot of that they need to do with the x86, x64 versions of Windows 8 and hardware to get them so that you can truly get all-day battery life with them. And that's the real challenge. You know, putting it into a into that form factor isn't difficult. I've got a Samsung Series 7 here that's perfectly, you know, makes a perfectly good tablet. But, it, you know, it heats up and the fan comes on and the battery life is 5 hours when you really need 8 hours. And so that's that. I wonder if it, that's where the challenge is, where they're working with Intel and some of the chip makers to get that circuitry so that the Windows 8 Pro version will have the performance that they need.
So we're going to take a break. Patrick, you're not seeing the Olympics. Anybody else watching the Olympics?
Yeah, a little bit. I tried to catch the 100-meter dash on the iPad stream to the Apple TV before I came up here, but I couldn't. Their iPad app is just...
It's pretty awful.
Janktastic.
NBC fail is the hashtag, and it's an interesting nexus between Twitter and NBC. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about Audible.com. Audible, of course, our online bookstore we're such big fans of. If the Diamond Club ever needs somebody to do a audio, that would ruin my career, actually.
I mean, do you think that you can carry the Brianna Young character? Can you do the lady voice?
No, it needs to be she should talk like Patricia Harkins Bradley talks. Wait a minute, let me just try. No,
you know, we have a staffer, Eric Hesseldahl, who has a fantastic radio voice.
Oh, maybe Eric could do it with me.
Yeah, hey, the two of you.
I was instantly lightheaded. My heart pounded, but I had to at least make an effort to keep it together. Oh.
All right, I'm leaving.
All right, I'll stop.
You know, I have to meet my kids soon. So.
Do you want to take off? You can take off. We're almost done, unless you want to talk about the Olympics and Twitter.
Yes, sure. Absolutely.
All right, hold on just a sec. But first, a word about Audible.com, and this will be quick. This is easy. This is painless. You know what I'm talking about. The best place to get audiobooks. 100,000 titles, fiction, nonfiction. You know, we're all busy these days. Who has time to read? And yet reading is, to me, was one of my great joys in life. That's when I found Audible, and I found it literally 10, 11 years ago now. It just changed my life because suddenly, you know, that time I spent in the car on the commute, the time I spent at the gym, the time I spent cleaning house and walking the dog could now be part of my reading time. And I just have to say, I'm so happy. The new read, and I actually, I hear this is an excellent audiobook, and I will be reading this because Wednesday, Daniel Suarez is going to be on Triangulation. We're going to interview him. He's the guy who wrote The Amazing Demon and Freedom TM, which were gripping, and I listen to them on Audible. Kill Decision, his new one just came out, is, of course, on Audible. And I hear a must listen. So this, I'm going to tell you how you can get this and maybe get Demon too for free. I'm going to get you two, not one, but two books at audible.com. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twit2. You'll be signing up for the Platinum account. That's the one I use. That's two books a month. I think that's just about right. If you're a heavy listener, it's perfect. Your first month's free. Your first two credits are free. And you can apply them to any of the books in the 100,000 strong Audible bookstore. But this would be a great one, Kill Decision from Daniel Suarez, or his first book, Demon. If you had one more credit, you could do all three. But next month.
Yeah.
Next month. You can't quit anytime. The books are yours to keep. You pay nothing if you don't want to. But I think you're going to want to. This is just, to me, anytime you spend in the car, in the plane, traveling, it's just such a relief to have Audible. In fact, for me, it's a security blanket. I don't travel anywhere without Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Yes, they do have 50 Shades.
Of course they
do. That's what I'm saying. They've got, and it's the number one download.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'll talk to Patty. I'll see what Patty's
Patty
doing.
Could read it. She could read it. She'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you, I was on that flight that I read The Diamond Club on. Part of it was because I got to the end of Dark Force Rising of the Star Wars.
You recommended that last time.
The Thrawn trilogy, on MacBreak. They have new readings of it, brand new. They just came out last month. They're awesome, but I forgot to download.
Isn't that the worst feeling?
Half part, and I'm on a plane. And
that's
it was
the
just
worst
like, no!
feeling.
No, what's Luke
gonna
do?
I have to read Diamond Club.
No, that crap.
Oh,
I feel so bad because I'm reading The Big Short by Michael Lewis.
That's a great book.
Fantastic.
Did you enjoy it?
I know.
The audiobook of it's fantastic.
You know what? It has so much pertinence to today's internet. Man. It just is a lot of what's going on.
Michael Lewis is untouchable.
You know what I would do? I would read the first one, The Liar's Poker.
Yeah, I've read it many times over and over again.
Oh, such a wonderful book. And he, in fact, refers to it at the beginning of The Big Short, saying, you know, I wrote Liar's Poker to change Wall Street so it would never happen again, and it's worse.
Yeah, fantastic. All this stuff about just a lot of the stock manipulation.
That would be, really, and he's the guy who wrote Moneyball, which was a huge hit.
Blindside, that's a big thing.
There's no alabaster thighs in it, though.
No.
Oh, unless you think
take a note, Mikey.
People
just
rolling
saying.
Around in a barrel of money. That's pretty sexy. Yeah.
No, it's people looking over 10K, pretty much.
The Big Short by Michael Lewis. And, of course, you know, I'm sure they have his other book as well. Let me just check.
Liar's Poker.
You should read one after the other. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, both fantastic.
Read Liar's Poker.
He's working on a really interesting book about Obama. He's been embedded in the Obama administration, so it should be interesting.
Really, wow. One of the best reporters out there. Great financial writer. Really fantastic. Gets through it. And he was Liar's Poker. He wrote because he was working.
Yeah,
was it Milliken or I don't know if he was working at Milliken's company.
No, he was
company.
At not Kudere. That's a law firm. Solomon Brothers.
Yeah. That's right. So he was like in the middle. That would be two good books. All right. If you don't want fiction, nonfiction, Liar's Poker, and The Big Short.
Yeah.
Two great Michael Lewis books.
They used to only have Moneyball abridged. Now they have Moneyball unabridged. Oh, which wow. Moneyball is. Fantastic.
You see, this is the problem. You go to Audible and you can't stop. It's like candy. You got to eat more.
No, every day or every month when it's like, you know.
I look forward to my renewal.
New Audible credits day.
Yeah.
Yippee, papa. Yeah.
Audible.com/twit2. Two books waiting for you. Absolutely free. So I'd be curious what you think, Kara Swisher, about what's your take on this Twitter issue? A journalist in England.
In LA, working for an English paper.
I said they borked. I said Twitter. I got a lot of pushback on the web because I said Twitter borked on this one because it was a very public email. This guy, it wasn't his private email. It was
Guy Adams is a writer for, is it The Guardian?
I thought it was fine. I thought what he did was fine. I guess it was against their terms of service.
No, it wasn't. Now, and this is very interesting. It was absolutely not. Here's the deal. So Guy Adams was. As many of us are, annoyed at NBC and how it was handling, particularly the opening ceremonies, published the business email address of an NBC executive, an address that he says was easily discernible. He also quotes in his letter to Twitter the terms of service that say if what you're publishing is already on the internet, you're off the hook.
Yeah.
That's why it wasn't a violation of the terms of service.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that NBC sent in a complaint, and then it automatically – it does that on YouTube, too, if you have – there's a question over your video. So I think it was – I was told by someone on Twitter it was very automated initially, but I think even they think it was a mistake to take him down.
Twitter
– my understanding is that it went the other way around.
Exactly.
That Twitter is the one who notified NBC, and Twitter, and in fact, the blog post and apology from Twitter was written by Twitter's general counsel, which suggests that they realized that they stepped in a big pile of legal mess.
Twitter's
because what they've done is the same thing as a publisher. If you start paying attention to the content of things that people are posting on your service, then you start becoming responsible for other things that people post.
You lose your safe harbor.
Which is going to be tough on Twitter, for goodness sake. I mean, the stuff that goes on there is much more liable, I would assume, some of the things that are said back and forth. But, you know, sorry for getting the right things wrong. I, again, was away last week. But I think they borked. I mean, that's pretty much how I looked at it. And I think that they understand that. But it was perfectly fine what he did. He was expressing an opinion about really bad coverage.
Well, and some of the concern was that NBC is kind of a hand in pocket with Twitter.
Well, yeah, and that's what it's funny. When you get down to the second to last paragraph on Twitter's blog, it's like the team working closely with NBC around our Olympics partnership with NBC right. did proactively identify a tweet that was in violation of the Twitter rules and encouraged NBC to file a support ticket with our trust and safety team to report the violation. And I can hear this conversation, and it's like, this guy's hammering us. What are you going to do about him? It's like, well, you could do this. And then that once this is filed, once the support ticket with Trust and Safety has been filed, Trust and Safety is obligated to basically hammer the account with a stick.
Yeah.
You know, and
I mean, I think they weren't understanding the difference between editorial and their business relationships, which I think is hard for a company like that. I mean, they are an edit. They are a publisher, and they also are a business. And so I think that's not very clear at that company that there are two. Possibly there should be a wall of some sort between what's on Twitter and what the business relationships are. So that'll be an interesting question for them going forward. But I mean, the guy had every right to do that, every single right.
Well, I mean, the question was the email, right? It wasn't necessarily that he was saying that everything stank on ice. It was that he gave away this dude's email that I'm sure people at NBC thought was less cool than he defined it as. That, you know, that it was easy to find on the internet. They consider that more private than they probably realize it is publicly available. And so that's why they came at it in like a we were injured kind of sense.
Don't you think that was just the excuse? The guy was
exactly.
I was involved in that because I was happened to be in Israel and I got to watch the whole thing and I was tweeting like, what the hell's going on with this Voldemort attacking the Mary Poppins thing? I was like confused. And so everyone was like, how are you watching it, Kara? And I said, I'm watching it in Israel. You know what I mean? And so it was, you know, and then I started insulting and then all these British people started insulting me and it went.
Wow.
But it was, you know, I was like, okay, they're like, oh, it's British humor. You don't get it. I'm like, fine, it's not good. But anyway, so, but it was interesting because the, I think then I started to notice all the Americans were like, why are you watching it? You know, and so I think that it was justifiable in terms of what he was saying. And he definitely was, I was reading him and thought he was the most effective Twitterer on this issue in terms of jamming at home that NBC had screwed up. And I thought that, it might have been that he was so effective that they decided to slow him down a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I just...
Twitter's all in an interesting position, too, because they are really moving into Hollywood. They're making a television show. Mm-hmm. There is kind of this interesting... You know, I've been following a guy named Dalton Caldwell. He started iMeme. And Pick Please, and he has started a new response to he feels that a lot of people, especially third party developers, feel like Twitter's turned their back on the people who created Twitter, the third party developers, the mm-hmm. apps. They want people to go to the website because they want to make the money on the ads. They've become an ad company, and there are a number of people who say that was a kind of a mistake. Apparently, it was an internal battle at Twitter some years ago.
It was
like what's going on at Yahoo. Should we be a platform or should we be an ad company?
Yeah, but Twitter, this has gone on before with developers. That's a problem. People are really eating off their ecosystem a lot. There's a lot of businesses that have been formed off the back of what Twitter's doing, and now they've been tried at different times to put a stop to it, and now they're really putting a stop to it. And so they made the decision. I mean, I don't think there's a debate any longer.
No.
They're not allowing people to suck all this data out of their system. And the question is, how important is this developer ecosystem to them or not? And it's definitely a fantastic story. And we had published some of the Dalton was also fighting with Facebook, which is interesting.
He wrote he actually was scathing. He said Facebook essentially invited us in and threatened us. And said, "Hey, we could either hire, you know, do an acquire,
nice
buy your
company.
Company
you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it."
Yeah, and he was shocked, and he wrote a post about it.
That didn't. Oh, he's shocked by large companies threatening small ones. That's
I think he wrote an open letter to Mark Zuckerberg. You can read it at DaltonCaldwell.com, telling the whole story about being threatened and. He thought he was going to be demonstrating an iOS app and service app.net, and it turned out he said it'd be, we could either crush you or we could buy you. What would you like?
That was a line Bill Gates used to use a lot. It was the first line of my first book on AOL. I mean, it's classic when big companies.
Right. So you say he's naive to think that it's
otherwise. No, he's not naive. It was a very good letter. But, this is what these companies, you know, when they want something, they want something. And in this case, I guess it's not quite like Microsoft because it's not a monopoly at this point. Right. But, you know.
Well, one of the things Dalton's done, and I've joined it, actually gave him some money. He's trying to create a paid not ad-based, but paid Twitter-like service with an open API. And he's asking people at join.app.net, he's doing kind of a fake Kickstarter. He says, I don't actually need the money. I just want to make, I want to see if people are involved enough to make this worthwhile.
So he's now pivoting app.net into a Twitter or Facebook or both competitors.
Twitter. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be open. It's actually very interesting. You know, this has been done before. Evan Prodromo, we've interviewed him, tried to do this with a status.net and Identica. It was originally Identica.
He's a sharp entrepreneur. He hasn't had success all the time, but he's definitely a sharp guy.
Dalton.
Yeah, fantastic entrepreneur. So
I'm very impressed, and I think he's right. And this is something I've been saying for a long time. And I think that Twitter is more, should be more of a public utility than an ad service. And it has, there's an opportunity for somebody to create that utility. And this is interesting.
But the question is ease of joining and getting the
well. Now you have to pay for it. So he says, well, you don't have to worry about spam. You don't have to worry about who's in there because it costs you money. Now, they don't know what how much it'll cost.
Is that solving a problem, you know, that we don't
promising that he's not going to, you know, I mean, like the classic problem was Facebook is where is my information going? Why do they keep confusing this? Why do they make privacy complicated? Why do I feel, you know, dirty every time I go there? Because I feel like all of this information of my life has been sucked out. If the idea is that we're not going to have ads and we're not going to data mine and we're going to keep things, we're basically going to give you for everybody who thinks they're actually going to Facebook to show up and hang out with their friends, we're going to give you an environment where you can go to Facebook and show up and hang out with their friends. Because it's interesting watching some people who are extraordinarily savvy about entrepreneurship and business and the big things we don't talk about, which is that the big money is mining the information on the backside, that if they're promising that, it makes it kind of really compelling.
There's a great saying that came from Metafilter, if you're not paying for it,
you're the product.
And so Dalton's idea is, well, let's pay for it and then we don't have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think it's a good idea. I support. I gave him $100.
My only question is, will it have enough people that we will get out of Twitter?
Of course, that's the huge problem. How many Twitter clones have I joined?
I mean, that's like a storied history. I want to see like the Rocky montage of Leo joining Twitter clones.
Every one of them.
I find Twitter enormously useful.
I do too.
Every day. A billion times a day, I am on Twitter.
I love Twitter, and I love using it, and it is incredibly useful, and I think it is a public utility, and it needs to be treated as such.
Also love Plurk.
Thank you, Plurk. Mr. Trotsky. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a shutter in the forest down in San Francisco, a disturbance in the forest.
They don't like me anyway. I don't care. Hey, let's see what's coming up. I want to let you go, Kara Swisher, because I know you got to go get the kids. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Kara's at All Things D, and we'll have you back soon.
We're going to go share some data with iTunes right now.
Go share some data, and go buy Diamond Club, because you'll love it.
I'm already done.
Thank you, Kara.
All the gay cruises are reading it.
Huge on the gay cruises.
You and me together, honey. We'll wear pastels. It'll be fantastic.
I can't wait. Take care, Kara. Let's take a look at what's coming up in the week ahead. Our great Tom Merritt of Tech News Today has a look. Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Of course, coming up tonight, Sunday, 10:31 p.m. Pacific, the Mars Curiosity lander will arrive one way or another on the surface of Mars. We're doing live special coverage of that starting at 10 p.m. Pacific right here on Twit. But if you're watching this later, that will be in the Twit Live special feed as well. Wednesday, August 8th, the T-Mobile MyTouch and MyTouch Q are coming for $50. Also, T-Mobile getting the Samsung Galaxy Note for $250. And the Usenix Security Symposium kicks off August 8th and runs through the 10th. Thursday, August 9th, RIM's 4G LTE tablet comes. And Saturday, August 11th, Chevron WP7 unlocked Windows phones will relock. Ooh, users get a free app hub, but that's your last day of the unlock. That and, of course, the Samsung Apple trial and lots of other stuff we'll be keeping an eye out in the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Great show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1700 UTC TNT, Tech News Today with Sarah Lane, I as actor, and of course, Tom Merritt.
And Jason Howell.
I almost said, who's that? But now I remember he's the tall guy.
Yes.
I see him around the building.
Ow.
Okay.
Love you, Jay.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. Tune in tonight for that. Are you excited about that, Edbot? Do you like space? Are you into that stuff?
I remember the moon landing like it was yesterday, and I've been a big fan. In fact, I remember the Challenger blowing up, and that was and you know so the highs and then and then the lows, and this is a hopefully another high.
I remember getting up.
I definitely want to watch.
I was about 13 years old when Neil Armstrong took that first step on the moon, and that's an age where that influences you for life. And like you, Ed, I very much remember watching the Challenger live. I was actually writing. I was in my, writing in my living room, writing Mac software.
I was homesick that day from from work. I was home on the couch. I had the flu, and I felt horrible. And I turned on the TV, and that just made horrible times, you know, two orders of magnitude.
Couldn't believe what I was seeing. It's like that can't have happened.
But so this is. But there have been in the space program. There have been so many more really uplifting, noble, wonderful moments, and I think this is going to be one of them. Especially given you know the sort of abandonment that we've had of this of the manned space program, that this is something to at least see. You know, the possibility of something we've never seen before.
I agree. It's very exciting.
I'll tell you what, space to me is on a roll. Yeah, I'm a huge SpaceX fan. I actually drove up because I just
did you?
Yeah, I saw
you watched the launch.
I saw the Dragon capsule that docked with the ISS launch from Canaveral.
I'm
so thrilled. It's just such a great time to care about space, and I think the reason why we've cared less about it is because there hasn't been a lot of punch in the gut, relevant, you know, kind of space explorations, you know, over the last 30 years. And now we are entering, in my opinion, a golden age for that. And
I hope you're right.
You know, we are we are going to see with companies like SpaceX and cheaper, you know, and hopefully if Elon Musk is correct, reusable rockets, you know, this is going to be a more regular part of our lives. And we can push the exploration for the human race in, you know, into just fantastic, amazing places in our lifetime, which is something that's fascinating and super cool. So
I'm pretty excited. And we put some really good coverage together for tonight.
And by the way, Leo, I think NBC is going to have the landing on Tuesday.
So edited slightly.
But they'll have
for
commentary
content,
so we all understand it. Brilliant, incisive commentary.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave that as my closing.
Thank you, Ed Bott. Great to have you here. I really appreciate it. You catch Ed Bott on ZDNet, of course, where he reports on Microsoft and other things. You're going to be reporting a lot on the trials, I'm sure, of Samsung and and a lot more. It's great to see you again. I just adore you. Thank you, Ed. Take care.
Thank you, Ed.
If you missed anything on Twit this week, we had a bunch of great shows, including you, Patrick Norton. Watch.
Be afraid.
Previously on Twit.
Do you want a faster gaming PC?
I do.
Do you want to spend all your money on a gaming PC?
No.
Do you want to waste your money when you're buying your next upgrade for hardware?
No.
Then you should be watching Twits This Week in Computer Hardware. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ryan Shrouds.
That was a big audience you guys had.
The fans lined up outside. Waiting to see. They're so excited.
And I gave them $10 to walk back and forth.
Here's the fan.
Oh, Alfred E. Newman.
NSFW. Wow. This is good.
Yeah, this was 2 weeks ago. Gets it done.
Tech news today.
And we've got something we like to call the calendoomer. That's when a calendar and a rumor love each other very, very
new segments.
If you missed this week on Twit, you missed a lot. That was the band Ready, Set, Go.
Get Set, Go. Yeah.
They were great, and that was the theme from Game of Thrones.
No, they killed it. That was 2 weeks ago on the show. We actually took this very spot.
This is where they played.
And thanks to the amazing Twit staff, Chad and Jammer B and everybody, they turned this roundtable set into a viable live recording space, and they were great. Go watch that episode.
We left it out of the promo last week, and I said, you got to get it in the promo because that was one of the best things we've done here in the studio. So it's 2 weeks ago, NSFW.
2 weeks ago. Last week was the launch of the Diamond Club. So
man, if you're missing NSFW, you're missing a ton. Not for the little kids, not for the little ones. Save that for the next time you're on a gay cruise, but it's really worth listening to. twit.tv/NSFW audio, but do watch the video.
Yeah, the video. We do a lot on video, and I've just gotten word that I will be part of the Mars Curiosity tonight. I'm just going to hang
out. You going to stick around?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So Tom Merritt.
Awesome.
We might even, if his plane arrives on time from Jakarta, we might even get a Brian Brushwood as well.
He's in Jakarta?
Yeah, it was in Indonesia for the last week.
For a gig or vacation?
gig. Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. He gets around.
We'll see.
It happened.
Yeah. Veronica Belmont and this guy here, Patrick Norton, are the great hosts of Techzilla, TEKZILLA.com. It's a great show. You got to watch.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Shark Week this week?
Shark Week next week.
I thought I was joking. What are you going to do?
I had to upgrade your shark?
No. We actually, there's been an interesting, the survey of Pacific predators top, and we talk about how they use digital technology to actually track sharks and other predators in the Pacific, and found some incredible stuff over the last 10 years, and actually some of the technology they're using to figure out some of the last of the really amazing secrets about white sharks.
That's awesome. I like that. You're taking Shark Week to a whole new level
of geekiness.
Of actual geekiness. Next week on the show, Kevin Rose will be here to talk about the new Dig.com, what he's doing at Google, and a whole lot more. I kind of like the new Dig.com. It's like Pinterest for tech news.
It looks good. I mean, I think, you know, I'll tell you what, we had a, you know, when the Diamond Club thing broke on Reddit, you know, you kind of got to look at, you know, we got sort of the both barrels front page of Reddit treatment. And, you know, it's one of those things Brian pointed out, and I don't know if I totally agree with him, but I see his point, that you're starting to get that same kind of maybe aggressive, mean mentality that was on Dig before Dig kind of...
The edge is back.
You're saying Reddit's getting mean?
Well, more. I mean, I guess I'm not a gigantic Redditor.
Right.
You know, like I'm.
And don't knock my Redditors, baby.
Oh, I love Reddit. I mean, like we've used Reddit for a lot of stuff, but I've usually only been on Reddit's where
good
they've
side.
Been for our communities.
Oh yeah, you don't want to make enemies, which is why I'm shutting you up right now. So
get at me, dog.
His name is. His name is Dan Benjamin. You can catch him on 5x5.com.
Exactly. No, there we go. Steve Kovac, at Steve Kovac on Twitter. Send all your hate mail.
Thanks for joining us. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock until dusk. It goes all day, all night. We might stay till Lamar's Landing. I don't know.
We've got like 80 people here. We're going to serve them all hot cocoa.
Let's feed them.
We're doing it all night.
The poor people are just dying. They've been here for so long. And we only have one toilet. So we're gonna stop now. But do tune in. 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC if you want to watch live on Sundays. But we make audio and video downloads available after the fact, always, on all the usual places. I get a lot of questions from people. What's the best way to make sure that I'm getting counted? Because I want to make sure that people know that Twit has an audience. And we do have a fantastic audience. And, you know, any way you watch it is fine with me. We'll count every single download. The only reason I say it's a good thing to subscribe is so you don't miss an episode. And I'd hate for you to miss anything that way. You make sure you get it automatically in the feed there. So subscribe on anything that you can use to subscribe. It doesn't really matter. Instacast, Dog Catcher, even that iTunes thing.
Sure.
Use that too. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
you. See you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Thank you, everybody.